Everyone, welcome back to episode 88 of Glee Chat. We're continuing our flashbacks project, which has been exciting. This week, we are going to be carrying on with getting towards the end of season one, some really good episodes towards the end of the season, and we're looking at laryngitis, and we are also looking at Drummond. So that's episodes 18 and 19 of season one. If you have any opinions about these episodes, you can reach us on our Twitter, which is Glee_chat, or you can comment on the Hyperbole post and we'll try and include your feedback in the next episode or answer your questions there. If you've got any future episodes you think would be a good idea to stick with, you know, for us to look at again in when we get to them in season two or in season three, let us know and we'll try and include those. You know, we can't do every episode because we don't really have time, but we've been voting very democratically and, you know, so we'll take people's opinions into account if there's something you think's particularly important and we might have forgotten about. So, yeah, it's four of us here today. Caitlin, Jack, Mitch and me. I'm Natalie, in case you're not familiar by now. But, yeah, we're going to hit it off with laryngitis, unless anyone has anything to announce first.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before about what was going on with John and how the listeners may feel they're a bit in the dark with what's going on in his life. He isn't going to be on for quite a bit. He's doing some travels right now, and he has said that he's going to be back for the actual season, but... yeah, just know that John's not dead and he still cares about y'all, but we're going to be pretty much the main team, I'd say, for flashbacks because we've all been consistently, like, really into it and, you know, watching and recording for it. So, let you fair listeners know that you're not forgotten in all of your wants and wishes.
Yeah, I think he's in Turkey or something, which, for him, I'm going to be in the UK for 2.5 weeks. Hopefully I'll still be able to record a flashbacks while we're over there, the next one for regionals, but we might bump it a week late in case, just in case of the internet connection not being good or the time zones not being good, because when I'm in the UK, we'll have to be going over 4 time zones. I mean, we're almost on 4 at the moment. Jack and I are very... you know, but we're very close together. In the UK, we'd have so Australia, UK, East Coast, and West Coast, USA, or Central Time. You might be on now, Mitch, or Mountain Time, is it?
Yeah, I've heard it called either. So,
No, they're 2 different things.
Central, oh, really? I wouldn't even know. I just know, yeah. It's like 2 hours behind EST.
You're on Mountain Time.
Mountain Time, it is Denver.
Yeah, yes. Mountain.
Got it.
Anyway, so yeah, it may be that time zones are not going to work fantastically, so we might be 1 week late with the next one, but for the finale of season one, but we will try and get that in a timely manner if we can. So yeah, we're going to go into laryngitis, which Jack has chosen to head up this week because it's one of his favorite episodes. But just before we start that, I'll just tell him and you and everyone right now, God, I had some emotions watching this episode. It's definitely one of the strongest, I think, ever of Glee. And, you know, I don't know whether people agree or disagree with that, but I was overwhelmed with a lot of thoughts and feelings watching this, so I'm excited to go ahead with that. Anyway, Jack, do you want to go ahead?
Yep. Well, before we get into 118, we had 117, Bad Reputation, because we had 116 last episode, which was Home, and then 117, Bad Reputation, 18, yada yada. So I'll just give a quick, here's what you missed on Glee for Bad Reputation. So Mr. Shu starts an investigation about a list that is posted around the school called the Glist. And what that pretty much is labeling and rating the Glee Club members based on their sexual nature, I guess you can say it, like sexuality, I'm
their
not sure.
Badness factor.
Yeah. Suri records us a video of herself doing some jazzercise to Olivia Newton-John's classic Physical, and that brings her into the episode, Olivia Newton-John, and they recreate the music video to be a bit more sexier and therefore getting rid of Sue's bad reputation. And that, I mean, that was funny, but God, it was weird to have Olivia Newton-John in that kind of role on Glee. But anyway, and we pretty much find out that Quinn was the one who made the glist because she was very upset about how she's been treated. She was pregnant, and now she knows what it feels like to be on the outside. That's pretty much it. Like, it was an alright episode. Nothing too flash.
So, once again, yeah, Jack. When you mentioned I watched half of this episode kind of by accident. So I remembered obviously half of what you were saying. The other half was still so far away in my memory that when you mentioned that Quinn was the one that made the list because she felt on the outside, it once again felt like that ridiculous parody Tumblr account that comes up with Glee spoilers but really doesn't, it comes up with like ridiculous plot lines. Like, and Quinn created it because she felt like it seems ridiculous for actually like anyone to make that other than the usual suspects. Of like, you know, Santana or Puck, right? So yeah,
that was a weird plot line though. Like,
very weird.
It was one of
Suppose it's like like her reign of queen bee around the school, but it's kind of weak.
Yeah, well, the glist also fuels Brittany, Mercedes, Kurt, and Artie to rebel and be a bit more bad. So they perform MC Hammer in the library, and that was a pretty fun scene. Yeah. Okay. It sounds really stupid. Like,
it's a bad episode. Right. I'm not going to lie. It's a bad... Sorry if you like it, but it's not a very good episode.
Better than most of season 5. Anyway. All right. So, so for 118 laryngitis, so Puck was forced to shave off his head due to a mole on his head, and in result, his popularity has apparently dramatically decreased. Now, due to Mercedes now being a cheerio, he feels that dating her would subsequently increase his status in the school. She then realizes that they are not compatible, and Puck gets hit with a dose of reality when they sort of break up, I guess. We'll talk a bit more about that later. Will assigns the Glee Club for each member to perform a solo demonstrating where they are at in their life at the current moment. So meanwhile, Rachel loses her voice and fears that her career is over. Finn introduces her to a friend who is paralyzed from the chest down, and he shows her that there is more to life than just her voice, and there is a lot more that you can lose. Kurt decides to change his appearance in order to impress his father, but Bert lets him know, again, that he loves Kurt with all his life and that family is, to him, is what matters most. Also, he and Brittany make sweet, sweet love. Okay, so the first plot line...
Well, not quite, but awkward.
Okay, so the first really plot I want to sort of talk about is Puck and Mercedes. Now, on paper, this seems like a very, very like dartboard relationship. Like, you just throw like two characters together and see what happens together. But the thing with Puck and Mercedes to me is that they work well together, but only because I'm realizing more and more about how Mercedes, like, whenever she's paired with another character, it just seems like she can just bring out a side to them that they can't bring out themselves. And I've said this a lot before. And what I meant before in the plot line about how Mercedes brings the best out, how Puck gets hit with a dose of reality, is when they break up and Mercedes says she doesn't like the guy who was throwing dweebs in the dumpster, and she doesn't think he likes him either. And that just sort of makes him think. And that's like the end of the plot. And I think that, I don't know, like, Puck has a lot of these moments, and I feel like, I feel like this one may have stuck with him a bit more than others, like, in terms of his character development in the future. Mitch, I'll go to you first. What did you think about the Puck and Mercedes? Did you like it, and did you see a bit more depth to it than could be just seen sees the eye?
You know, it's unique because it's one that I forgot about, but it wasn't one that came off as, like, Quinn made the glist to me. It was one that was a lot more natural than I expected it to be. When I say one, I mean plot lines. So it was a welcome plot line in the House of Mitchell Clow, and I shipped it more than I thought I would, and I think that I would probably continue shipping it. And it's funny to me that he was referencing Mercedes as that black chick from Glee Club that I can't remember the name of right now. Because I was like, dude, first off, you should know her by now. Second off, obviously, that has plenty of racist connotations to it. And third off, knowing all of the characters as well as we do right now, it is absolutely appalling that any of them would not know each other's names whatsoever. Especially like Puck not knowing Mercedes. It's just weird. It's very foreign.
Yeah, Mitch, yeah, I agree with you in terms of not knowing her. I will just hold you up and say it's not racist to call a black person black, like to use that as an identifier. I mean, it depends on who, you know, I'm sure that people could use it as a slur if they want to, but yeah. That is how the black community identifies themselves. So if you were trying to be like, oh, yeah, yeah, the black girl over there, like, as opposed to someone else, it's not racist. It's, as far as my, you know, knowledge and extensive attempts to be a decent person in the world go, that is not actually racist. So, yeah.
Love the way you said that.
What?
Your attempts to be a decent person in the world, that is not racist.
It's a full-time job. There's a lot to know.
But anyway, yeah, in terms of them not, like, them just not knowing each other, that's, like so stupid by now. Like, I don't know why they keep playing that joke.
No, I think, like, to be honest, I think, like, I guess this is more headcanon more than anything, but I think that's just Puck, like, in his own head being, like, sort of,
cocky,
trying to not accept that he's you know, that he's friends with these people. You know, it's just like, oh, I don't know this girl's name, we're just in the club together, you know, but he knows Mercedes, like, you know.
Yeah.
I want to put up a Glee Chat really challenge for someone to go back and like send us a good gif or a time code of a YouTube video of them like dancing together, or maybe even just like a number where they were like dance partners, because I'm sure it exists.
They've already had that entire plot, Mitch, where they were paired together in Ballad and he told her about being Quinn's baby father. He definitely knows who she is.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I didn't watch Ballad, but I believe you.
Yeah, this isn't the first time that they've had like a significant connection either. So anyway,
yeah.
I don't know. Are we supposed to assume that like Puck's really to some extent like as I hesitate to say stupid, but absent-minded as Brittany? In the fact that he wouldn't know someone's name that he'd definitely interacted with a lot.
No, I think the point is that he was, like, posturing. Like, that he was, like, either just not caring, like, that he does stuff and doesn't care that much, or that he's pretending not to care.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And, like, for a show like Glee, I wish we had seen more of these, like, off-the-wall relationships. Like, obviously, we missed out on Quinn and Mercedes after actually was a pretty big deal in season one. Like, rewatching, I forget how much they, like, in the back nine, how much they actually had together. And, yeah. Like I said, for a show like Glee, yeah, I wish we had seen more of those relationships. Like, I mean, we get Quinn and Artie, but that only lasted, like, one episode, and I don't know. So, Caitlin, what did you think about Quinn and, Puck and Mercedes? I know you have got a lot of feelings, Natalie, because, you know, Puck's your favorite. But, Caitlin,
yeah,
what do you reckon?
Get to me later. Don't worry about me.
Yeah, I'll go Caitlin first, then we'll go to you.
I like this plotline a lot. It works for me because Mercedes is one of those people who is not going to take Puck's crap. And Puck spews a lot of crap, and Mercedes just does not have time for that. And it's a level of respect there that Puck can respect her because she doesn't take his crap, and it's worth listening to her because she doesn't necessarily take everything he's dishing at face value. So I like that, and I like that she's trying to respect herself by acknowledging what's going on, though she obviously kind of falls into an issue as it goes on, but then she really comes around and is like, nope, I have too much self-respect for this, so I just... Mercedes Jones is a queen, that's all I'm going to say. She's fabulous. Yes. I love her.
Yeah. And it's very reminiscent of the reason why he was attracted to Zaius in season two as well, just the strong, confident woman that she is, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Natalie, what do you think?
As I said, I always really liked this. I mean, I think we're going to go blow by blow in terms of the musical numbers as well. But I love that when Puck likes someone or wants to get someone a bit, that he really, I love the music he uses to pick up people, except Fat Bottom Girls with Queen. Like, I loved when he did Sweet Caroline for Rachel, and I love Lady and the Tramp. Like, I think he is so good at like Motown and swing, and I want like a Noah Puckerman swing album or something. I have thoughts on this, which we'll get to when we actually go through the musical numbers specifically, but oh, so good. But yeah, I mean, I don't always like Mercedes in some of her interactions, but there are other people that she interacts with where, yeah, like you said, she really does like bring out the best in them, if you know what I mean. Like, it's funny because I probably prefer her with Puck and the way that she makes Puck act, if you know what I mean, compared to her with Sam. That being said, I don't ship her and Puck together more than I ship Quinn and Puck together, so it's a bit of a... It's not like I'm like, oh, OTP or anything, but I love the effect that she has on Puck, and I love the effect that she has on certain people that are just, like, smacked in the face with her kind of confidence and sound logic and stuff like that. And it kind of disappoints me for the other moments where she's kind of just a bitch, if you know what I mean, like where she's not actually very... you know, or she does something really stupid. But, I mean, I suppose everyone has their ups and downs. Definitely right. Liked her so much in this episode compared to my sort of memory of liking her in general. I think it's true. Like, what you said about, you know, him not liking that person, you know, who throws people in a dumpster, I think that it's true. Like, I think he's really at this point where he has to kind of make the choice between, between who he was and who he's discovering that he is. And he sort of, it's sort of hard to accept that you have changed or that you didn't really know yourself or like yourself or that you were doing something because you didn't like yourself. And I think that he's kind of in the middle of that point of kind of realizing that he's not, not just the, oh, that he's not all that, but like that he doesn't like being the way that he is. And I really like that. I always like seeing that, and I think that he's, I don't know, I just think that he's such a good character, for better or worse, like whether his behavior is good or bad, I think that he's such a good character. So I was, yeah, big fan of this plot line and a big fan of the musical number that came with it as well.
Well, what you said before about how, you're not sure if he, well, he knows what he's, like, I think he knows what he's doing is wrong, but he just can't stop it. Like, and I don't know if it was this season or if it's already happened or if it's season two, but there's a scene where he's talking, where Puck's talking to somebody saying he comes into school and he doesn't want to start throwing kids into dumpsters, but all of a sudden he's like by lunchtime and then he's already got a guy in the toilet giving them a wedgie or whatever, I don't know. But see, I think he knows what he's doing.
Is he having like aphasia? Is he having blackouts? Is he like bipolar?
No,
like...
no, it's just his attitude and his behavior. He just can't help himself.
It's his defense mechanism and stuff. But I liked right at the beginning as well, where he kind of had his head shaved and when the nerds came up to him to throw him into the dumpster, he was just like, okay, like he kind of just took it, if you know what I mean. Like he was just like, funny. And he didn't. It's like he doesn't realize that no one has to be in the dumpster, if you know what I mean. Like it's not an either or situation. But, yeah, I don't know. And, you know, you see that pretty well when he kind of pulls Jacob aside after Jacob starts avoiding his eyes. And, you know, he's like, take my lunch money as an apology. And he's like, put that away. And, you know, he starts being normal. And then he kind of is like, he doesn't realize that there's a balance that can be had, that he can be a good dude and not, you know. Yeah. It's interesting because Rachel's plotline, which we'll talk about in a minute, is, you know, her realizing that her voice isn't the only thing about her, you know, that even if she thinks that it's her only talent or her only thing of worth, that if she lost it, it's not the only thing about her and that she would still, you know, carry on. I actually see a bit of a parallel of that in Puck, like he thinks that this is the only thing he can be, like, if you know what I mean, that this is the only thing that'll work for him or get him any power or respect. That he doesn't have enough going for him in any other aspect to actually be a good guy, like, you know, like Finn or whatever, like that he, you know, doesn't have enough going to be, you know, liked or to be successful, and that he thinks that this is the only way that he'll have any kind of power.
Which is why I think being in the military is great for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I do as well. I think it's a really good plot for him, and I don't think he's the kind of person that would abuse it either. Like, I don't think that he'll just go crazy with, like, you know, military power or anything. I don't think he'd abuse it. I think it would be good. And I am glad they ended up taking that plot line, because I remember when they were going to put Finn in the military, everyone was like, okay, well, I get it because of the dad thing, but no. Like, everyone had already sort of been headcanoning for 2 years that it would be the really good thing for Puck, and... you know, and it was, why are they giving this plot to Finn instead of Puck? But then obviously Puck did go down that path as well. So, yeah.
And I feel like it makes Puck doing it a lot. And it feels a lot better because he makes that decision once Finn passes away. And then that sort of makes him realize that that would be a good fit for him and do something that Finn wanted to do but couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't right for him, but still, yeah, I liked it. But like, this plotline makes him, like, it's not really like a big point or anything, but the popularity at the school works really weird.
This is what I was going to say. I was like, American people, are kids really this fickle? Like, is there actually this much of, like, a clique or, like, this much of, like, abuse or, like, you know, like, is this real? Like, or is this even, like, a close caricature of being real?
This was not my high school experience, even remotely, so...
Yeah.
No, yeah, Natalie, I think it's unique that you're bringing this up, because I was just talking with a couple other High People staff about Gossip Girl, the clicks in that show, and whether that was realistic or not, and oddly enough, it turned out that one of our co-writers in Hypeable went to high school with one of the stars in the show and was referencing a clique that she was in and how people were kind of like voted in and out of popularity queen, like kind of on a dime and like crazy weird stuff. And then
Seriously?
Yeah. And I recalled a moment that happened to me when I was in sixth grade, a moment, I guess it was more of a season where I wanted to be a cool kid. And I'm pretty sure I've told this on Glee Chat before, but at risk of repeating, where I had eaten onion every week, one a week, to be a part of the Onioneers, who were the cool group. And if I wasn't...
What?
Yeah, and that one's kind of like a silly like example, but...
Is this real? Like,
yes, the Onioneers was totally a thing. And I have witnesses. I have people that remember the Onioneers. So, to answer your question, I didn't see it too much in high school in like an extreme way like they do in Glee. It does exist because, like I was just saying, in shows like Gossip Girl do apparently show what people like the show that on the show Gossip Girl did do in high school.
It's funny that you bring up Gossip Girl because I've never really seen Gossip Girl, but that's why, like, based on kind of what I know, this episode seemed to mirror what would be in that series, if that makes sense. Like, the way the high school and the cliques in that work.
I mean, yes, and there's less...
That's what it seems like.
There's less violent bullying. It's, I think just from the title, you can assume that it's a lot more, like, backstabbing and I'm going to get you back by having my rich daddy do something to you, right? So it's a different kind of clique and different kind of bully. There's no dumpster at all. But Natalie?
It's really weird to me. Just in my school, I mean, it was all girls, but it was so kind of like the not really the same. But it was, you know, there were definitely like groups that were like the popular or cool groups or whatever. But they didn't like... It was like the groups just kept themselves to themselves. It wasn't it might have been like an unspoken hierarchy, but it wasn't like, it wasn't, number one, it wasn't sports based because like no one cared. It was more like there was a group of girls that were like, you know, quite, you know, glamorous or more high maintenance or whatever than, you know, pretty or like, you know, whatever. But it's not like they bullied the other people. There may have been specific cases of bullying, but actually most of the bullying I ever saw throughout both primary, like junior and high school was friendship groups in the same circle where there would be like a scapegoat of the group that was in the circle. So it would be like if the Glee Club bullied a member of the Glee Club, basically. And that was more how bullying worked in my schools.
Yeah, that's exactly like me as well. I mean, there wasn't like... Yeah, you've got the group who's obviously, like, who are looking on the outside, you probably would call them, the popular kids and stuff. But it wasn't like, oh, my God, the popular kids, please, I want to be in your group, you know. It was just them, like, you know, and then there was, like, just everyone else. So, yeah, you've got, like, the nerdy kids and then the in-betweeners and, you know, but it wasn't like... We weren't eating onions to get into a group. Like, that's a funny metaphor.
Oh, my God.
Like, I couldn't sit at their table if I didn't. I kid you not. Because it was only, like, one day of the week at the cafeteria that they served, like, onion on, like, a ham and cheese, and no one ever got it. So they were kind of shocked. You know, they must have stocked up on more onions once they realized that the Onioneers was a thing. Oh, it was just...
Wow.
It's very Mean Girls, actually, if you think about it.
My school just... I do not remember this much clickiness in my school, and because I remember spending parts of the day in various cliques. Like, people would hang out in different groups, but depending on like the time of day or class that I was in, I was hanging out with all kinds of people from different groups. So I do not, there may have been individual groups, but there was a lot of fluidity between them.
Yeah, I don't know, it's so weird.
Well, it's not, you bring up a good point, Caitlin. It's not necessarily negative that cliques exist. The Onioneers is probably morally gray, but as far as other cliques existed, like, I had good experiences with doing what you did, Caitlin, jumping around and being friends with a bunch of different people, and it was kind of fun, and I don't know, maybe we could say Finn was a good epitome of that because of, you know, his sportiness and musical theaterness that he had going on at the same time. So it's not like Glee doesn't try and combat that. And we also have to know, obviously, Glee and Gossip Girl and, you know, any popular show that has a lot to do with cliques is going to be more of a parody or a commentary, not exactly a true representation.
Something. I'm like, I've never seen anything like it. We would never call, I would say that like cliques and stuff, that would be a term that I wouldn't really ever have used for like my high school experience or anything like that. People had groups, but I don't mean, oh, that's the nerdy group or the cool group. It was just their friendship group, like different groups of friends who hung out together, if you know what I mean. And there were definitely, you know, some that were more of a one type of person or other, but it was not like a clique thing. And I don't know, it had to have come from somewhere, this idea, but I've never really heard of someone who has experienced it in the way that it is on television, except the Onioneers, of course.
Only we made flashback episodes, names. I'd love to just name this the Onioneers, because it's such a visual, doesn't it? It sounds like something really heroic. I don't know.
It sounds terrible.
I don't know which is the right word. I feel like if we ever have like another guest on Glee Chat, we should make them eat an onion before they can be on the episode.
Continue the horrible tradition of my nightmares of sixth grade. I still can't eat onions. I think they're horrific.
Alright, I think we should move on. Yeah.
Okay.
You join us eat an onion before he comes back on Glee Chat.
I think that's a good plan.
That's a great plan.
Alright, so the next episode. So the next plot in the episode is Kurt continues to ignore Bert being the most accepting father and like ever. Okay, so the reason, it's hard to
really
get words out about this.
You're really angry at him, aren't you?
I'm not really angry. I am angry. So like Bert is always there saying like he's always going to love Kurt no matter what, and Kurt just keeps throwing it in his face saying, is it because I'm gay, is it because I'm gay? And Bert's like, no, we did this like episode 3 of this season, like we've already been through all this. And like, as much as Bert wants like to be around Finn, Bert's motivations always just come from a really good place. Like, he understands that Finn had never had a father to take him to sports games, and he knows how important it is to Carol, who he really cares about, so he's just trying to be a decent human being. And then you get his son there just throwing crap in his face, telling him that you're not loving me because I'm gay. And it's like, no, like, he's not doing that. Like, get off your horse. Like, it's so silly. But the thing, the other side of this storyline to me is that Kurt's motivations didn't completely come from being centered around Bert and Finn. Like, it was just more along the fact that he thought that he wasn't similar to Bert and then, like, was crazy and stuff. But that brings up a point, like, do we feel a bit more sympathetic to Kurt in this particular episode just because it wasn't all masked by completely by Kurt getting between like Bert and Carol, who set up, and then trying to chase after Finn? Caitlin, what do you think? Do you feel more sympathetic to Kurt in this episode, or how do you feel?
No.
Okay.
You're like, I hate
Finn.
I mean, it's still a result of the situation that he created, and then he's mad that things are not going the way he wants. I think in this episode, his reaction feels very human, that he's feeling left out because Bert has a new presence in his life and he's doing things that are traditionally masculine or whatever that Kurt's never shown any interest in doing. So it feels very human, but it's going, I like when Bert just says, don't go playing the victim. Like, he's like, I've had it, like, stop. Like, Kurt, come on. I don't have sympathy for him when he is just on the crazy train. Like, calm down.
Which is pretty often. It's pretty rare, other than those fabulous background moments that Natalie referenced, where he's just, like, a complete and utter bitch. Like, a funny bitch. That he's not off the rail, because he's not really grounded. It doesn't seem like he really understands how the world works, or how people react, or think, or do. He goes to the extreme of the defense, like Bert points out, and makes me happy that he has someone like Bert in his life, not only to be as accepting as he is, but also to just be like, dude, you really take everything to too high of an extreme. It's really time to calm down and realize that the world is not out to, like, run you down at its first opportunity, regardless of the bullies, which definitely are there. So I guess we could say that that's where he gets a lot of his jadedness, and maybe why he's scared of anything and everyone, because he doesn't know how to trust in a lot of stuff, but a lot of deep-rooted psychological stuff that Glee probably doesn't think too much about.
Yeah, Kurt lives in Kurt's world, where he makes up everything that he wants to happen to him, and when it doesn't go precisely his way, like, he loses the plot, but then decides that it's, like, you know, the fault of everything else. And I'm not saying that he hasn't had a shit time or anything, because he has in some ways, but he is slightly deluded. Like, he lives in a dream world where he is, you know, he can either play the hero, where he, you know, at moments he's, you know, the hero, and at moments he's like the beautiful wilting victim, and you know, having that thrown back in his face and go like, dude, you're actually not, you need to chill out, is something he doesn't handle too well. I don't know, with Kurt and Bert, like, what did he expect to happen? Like, with, okay, so let's lay this out. He set up Bert and Carol so that he could get closer to Finn, and that Finn would fall in love with him. And, like, what did he expect to happen? That, like, Bert and Carol would move in together, that Finn would latch on to Kurt, that Bert would completely ignore Finn and Carol, and so Kurt would have... How does Kurt expect to have Bert to himself and Finn to himself if he wants Finn's family to marry his family? How does he expect that to happen?
How does he expect everything to be okay with what's going on with him being with Finn in his delusional world while his parents or their parents are together? I mean, once again, I've really been finding a lot of great, I'm glad I'm watching the show right now, Gossip Girl references to Glee, because that's one of the biggest dramas of that show, that it's awkward for either the parents or the kids to date each other at the same time. Like, they had to take turns almost. So, I mean, it's just kind of weird that Kurt's just like, I'm going for whatever. And that's very delusional. And if not for all arguments of is this or is this not proper incest because it's not blood, we could also say it's just probably going to be awkward, even if Kurt's delusion does turn out to be true, the fact that the parents are dating and the boys are. Like, that, does that roll off the brain too easily? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's weird. And I don't know, I mean, I think that I do feel him in this episode. I feel his pain, I feel why he's bummed, and he's like, oh my god, my dad has got this, you know, new person that's the son he always wanted. I feel the pain, but he did literally create this situation himself.
Yeah, like, it's so hard to feel sympathy when he did it to himself, you know?
Yeah, and as I said, did he expect Natalie, I want to, like,
bring up... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I want to bring up a point you said before, like, about how you said Kurt lives in his own dream world. One of, like, my least favorite qualities about people and, like, what Kurt is showing is, like, he is expecting, and he's expecting something to happen, so all he can see is that thing happening. Like, so, like, he thinks that Bert is going to run away and ignore Kurt forever, be with Finn and Carol, and that's it. So that's also, he only sees behaviors about Bert that just justifies his own thinking, if that makes sense. And that's what I absolutely hate about people, how you try and get through to them and tell them that, and I mean, this coming from, like, I've had this, like, situation in my life, like, you're like, you try and tell somebody that they're wrong and that they're just seeing what they want to see, and they're so arrogant, they don't believe it. And that's, I think that's honestly where my frustrations for Kurt are coming from a rewatch, because, I mean, I guess I was younger when I watched this, I didn't actually appreciate as much of, like, character as I do now, But rewatching, I'm just getting more. I'm finding myself getting more pissed with Kurt about this. I think that might be where it's coming from. Like, I'm just over people like just being so arrogant and just not realizing that they are in the wrong. Yeah.
Bert simply has given him no reason to think that he's being replaced or anything, but Kurt just cannot see that somehow.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, it just makes me so angry. Like, yeah.
And wouldn't Kurt, like, appreciate the fact that he now has, like, a better in with Finn? Because he has more to relate to Finn about. Like, oh, hey, did you eat some of my dad's chili yet? He makes that really well, doesn't he? Come over for dinner one night. You know, like, he probably could have played this board to his twisted advantage if he wanted
to. Yeah, but he's an idiot. I'm sorry, but he's not a very smart kid. Like, he's deluded, and he's in it. I mean, yes, he's intelligent, but he's not using it correctly at all. And yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, it's
only used your powers for good, not evil, Kurt.
I don't know.
Kurt being kind of a little bit like, oh, why didn't you ask me if I wanted to come to the baseball game, even though you knew I'd say no, the invitation would be nice. But then Bert explains what's going on and he still continues to be upset. Like, he gave you the explanation of what's going on and his thinking and everything. And you still are not getting it.
You know what? But to his merit, I can understand. Go ahead, Jack.
Okay, I was going to say, how can Bert still? How can Kurt still be shitty at Bert when Bert explains to him that the reason why he's going with Finn is because he has a dead father who he could never do this stuff with? Like, and I would understand Kurt being really upset because he's lost his mother.
Kurt hasn't been spending time with Carol and shopping and getting her hair done and stuff, and that Finn is not caring about that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and Kurt is still so shitty that Bert doesn't get Bert's not spending time with him because he's with Finn, because Finn hasn't got a dad. But, like, he should understand. He honestly should understand that. Like, you know. But he doesn't. He doesn't.
Well, I have to stand up for Kurt in the slightest here by saying that I do understand what it's like to not be invited to do something when someone knows that you wouldn't like to do it for the fact of the matter that you want to feel included, even though it wasn't like it's more of like a proper thing to do in my eyes that maybe it was more of the way I was raised that you always were polite enough to invite the people that were in your immediate life to do such and such a thing. Yeah. And, like, I mean, like, I was never into hunting. Let's go with this example. My father would always invite me to go hunt a camp, and I never once wanted to pick up a rifle and shoot a deer. Like, that's not my thing. But
Jesus.
I know. It's kind of like a Kurt and Bert thing all over again. But it was very nice to know that my father always wanted to include me in things, even when, yes, he did end up taking, like, my cousin to go do it or something. Like, he always asked me first. And I did feel that was a proper thing to do. But maybe someone else has, like, a different opinion as to, like, where that fits. But, Jack, what do you think?
Rebuttal. Okay, I do agree with that. I do agree with that. I think it's the most respectful to ask somebody to do something, even though you know they weren't like doing that thing, especially when it's like a father son relationship. But considering that, like, in my opinion, looking from the outside, considering that Bert has known Kurt has been quote unquote this way since like for 16 years, like they make jokes about how you could tell he was gay when he was a little kid. Like, Kurt can't get shitty at Bert for not inviting him to stuff, because I'm sure it's been said that Bert has made an effort to Kurt all the time to invite him to, I don't know, go out hunting and things like that when he was younger. But if Kurt consistently says no, like, he can't get shitty at Bert for not inviting him in the future.
That's kind of Jack, that they know each other well enough to know that you wouldn't have to invite. For example, I don't drink tea. And so whenever my friends and the people I live with are like, oh, does anyone want tea? They don't just ask me every time, oh, Natalie, you don't want tea this time, right? If you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, I don't know, guys, because, like, to Natalie, you struck up a really relevant factor in my life right now. The fact that I don't drink, and I have a lot of people that know that I don't drink ask me to drink in not a pressureful way, in an inclusive way. And I, once again, I always appreciate it because it always makes me feel included, because it's such an important thing for like friendship bonding experiences, for people to go to parties and, you know, have that social life. And that's where
I would say in that circumstance, Mitch, I mean, sorry to cut you off. I didn't mean to. In that circumstance, I would be like, yeah, I would hope to be invited. I'll be like, do you want to come out with us? Like, I know that you're not going to drink, but do you still want to come and hang out? That, yes.
I was just about to say that, yes.
But there's some level of enjoyment I could still get out of going.
I would not. We're not doing the one activity. People were like, are you sure you don't want a beer this day? Are you sure you don't want a beer today?
Right.
Are you sure you don't want a cocktail today? Like, that, I would think that was offensive.
Which people do, and I can see, like, if I was Kurt to Bert, if it was like, are you sure you don't want to go to the baseball game? Like, it's going to be really, like, I know.
I feel like if Bert was saying to Kurt, like, every time, are you sure you don't want to come to the baseball game with me? Are you sure you don't want to go fishing or whatever? That Kurt would take that as, oh, he's trying to change me and make, you know, he's right, sad that he, you know, he's disappointed that I'm not doing these things with him, as opposed to, you know, accepting that he doesn't and then taking him to Riverdance 3 years in a row, if you know what I mean.
Which, you know what? It's funny, too, that you bring up all that, Natalie, because I can think of, like, another parallel with myself and my father, where he once in a while would try and pressure me, because, like, it would be like, oh, come on, it's really fun. You hang out with the guys and you just, like, drink beer and, like, I mean, two things I don't like to do already right there, drinking beer and hunting, right? Come on.
Jesus.
It would be, I know. but then he would make an effort in a way to, like, do the things that I want to do. Like, I've spoken of how I was Captain Hook in my little Peter Pan high school play once, right? My parents went to, like, all seven performances of that, and they couldn't, like, get enough of being supportive of me for it. And that was, it was like, you couldn't even hear me because my microphone was so distorted. It was kind of like the early episodes of Glee Chat, actually. It was not even an enjoyable experience, but if parents care enough, they'll find a way to, like, work it in. And I do think that bringing him to Riverdance or whatever Bert's been doing, you know, might have made up for all the times that he didn't do it. But I still, I see absolutely where Jack and Ellie are coming from about, you know, if he knew for all these years. And unless Kurt has explicitly told his father, as I've done often, don't ask me that again, I will never do XYZ, I still think it's in the right of Bert to ask Kurt to do something. But yeah, I'm okay if you disagree on that fact, though, because I can see, like I said, both sides of that coin very clearly, and I think a lot of that might come from where I first referenced, like, how we were raised and what we thought was proper to do or not to do, and where it became a nuisance to, like, tell someone something, right?
Caitlin, how about you?
Bring it back to, like, a level, like, sorry, I'll just say my point, then I'll go to you, Caitlin, then we should probably move on.
Jack, you can argue so long. I love it so much.
Just one more point. I just want to bring up, like, a pretty good thing one of you guys said about, like, Natalie, you said you don't drink tea. I think, like, a good metaphor out of this is there's a very big difference to asking somebody to, if they want to drink tea or just go out with them, you know? Like, if you said to somebody, oh, do you want to come out to this coffee shop with us, rather than being like, do you want to come out and drink coffee, you know? Like, yeah. Bert could just say to Kurt, hey, did you want to come? Oh, I don't know how to put that into words. But do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't know. Caitlin, what do you think? What do you reckon about all this?
Well, I'll just rehash what I already said, that I think I get Kurt's frustration with not being invited and feeling included. But once Bert gave him the explanation, I feel like that should have been enough.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think so as well. To me, it really seemed like it came from that Bert thought that they knew each other well enough not to need that kind of drama, if you know what I mean.
Well, not even that. Well, maybe that, actually, because they are just living together, so they must know each other inside and out to every extent.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know Bert must know Kurt's, like, nightly facial routine by heart by now, right? But I can see where you're coming from, Caitlin, only from the fact of, like, maybe if Bert was to be like, okay, you know what? It wasn't cool for me to just go and ask Finn and not ask you first. I'm sorry. I kind of messed up. And then Kurt went on with it, if that's what your point was.
Well, essentially just being like, well, here is my logic behind what I'm doing. It's not intentionally trying to leave you out and replace you as a son, Kurt. It's because this is what Finn needs, and I'm trying to do this for him, and I know you don't like this. So he explains what he's doing and that he's not trying to leave him out or anything. So I feel like Kurt should have an emotionally mature reaction would have been, okay, I understand.
It's also a pretty clear sign that he doesn't know anything about, like, that Kurt has a very skewed idea of what it is to be, quote-unquote, in love as well, given that, you know, if, you know, that he doesn't really seem to care about Finn's happiness when it comes down to that and his own. And I don't think Kurt has really learnt anything up to this current point in the show when it comes down to someone else's happiness versus his own. I mean, it would be great if those two things were, you know, connected with whoever he is with, but he does really seem to make emotions a competition, even with someone who he's meant to be in love with. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Good times.
Yeah. Okay, so the third plot in this episode. That was good discussion, guys. In this episode.
Yes, high fives. Which high fives made sounds of claps did when you're by yourself, but. Internet high five counts, I guess.
All right, so Rachel in this episode, as we said, she had lost her voice, and she feels like that her life is pretty much over. Despite the fact that she doesn't, that she leaves Broadway in season 5, whatever. I feel like that this, if she took the lessons from this episode about her realizing that so much more that you can lose in your life than just one quality about yourself, if she kept this and used this as an anchor for her selfish behaviors in the future, she probably would have been a lot more well off. I mean, this is all like obviously Finn had a major influence in being her anchor. And I really like that term anchored from like Teen Wolf. I've always loved that. And then obviously this storyline was accompanied with the big number one at the end, which we can talk about the songs later on, but one is literally my third favorite song of all time. And the Glee version is pretty great. Like, it's really, really good. One of their better ones.
I'm not a massive, like, I don't hate U2 or anything, but I'm not like a U2 stan or anything either. But this, like, the Glee version, like, I've known U2 songs and I knew this song before Glee, but the Glee version is definitely one of my favorite things they've ever done on Glee. It really made me, like, focus on, like, the lyrics and the meaning of the song and stuff, and I love it so much. But anyway, carry on. Sorry.
You know, it's actually kind of timely that we're doing an episode of Glee where U2
is inclusive.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, has anyone listened to the new album past the point of, I don't like that it was forced into my iTunes? I don't know if they're still, like...
I don't have an iPhone, so it wasn't forced onto my phone, saying.
I think it was just iCloud accounts. iCloud accounts exist for all iTunes users. If you activate them, I'm always very fuzzy on what iCloud is. Well, I mean, my question was simply...
I don't know what the cloud is. What
I know.
It's
the cloud is just ambiguous and whatever you want it to be.
Sorry, but like, I'm so
exactly.
stupid.
Apple never
I don't
did a
understand
good job
anything.
Explaining what the cloud is.
Who's like our...
Oh, yeah, it's in the cloud. What?
Like, we need Danya. Danya would be able to tell us, Caitlin.
Danya can tell us, but Caitlin, do you know what the cloud is?
It's like amorphous storage that's in the ether. Like,
and how much of it do you have? Like, what can you
isn't
it?
Just the internet? Like, haven't we always had that? Why are we calling it the cloud? Like, I don't understand.
That's golden. Oh,
even
my God.
Like, calling it the cloud makes it seem so unreliable. Like,
it's just going to blow away. It's going to blow my nudes everywhere.
It's going to rain.
Not that I have any.
Give everyone information.
Yeah. The clouds can kind of, like, fuzz away, right? They're not really solid things, and it's just, it's weird. It's really, like, I don't know if, that's weird. But, no, my question was, like, musically, U2 obviously is a big influence on a lot of different artists and has a big impact in the world, et cetera, et cetera. Are they still even relevant enough to even warrant what Apple did? And if so, like, was this album a good way to prove that? Like, was the music on that album legit, or was it just like they're washed up and this is the way to shove them into the world again? I don't know, Jack.
I am a big fan of U2. I haven't listened to this album yet just because, like I said, I don't really like that I was forced to have it, even though I probably would have bought it anyway. But it's still quite annoying. I don't like the concept that Apple was able to do that. I think U2 have been pretty good at giving, like putting songs into, like, the modern music, like, industry now, and they obviously were really good back then. Like, I don't know, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, and, like, so the songs like that, like, they're pretty big, everyone knows.
Yeah. I wouldn't call them washed up. I would just call them sort of retired. If you know, it's not like they started doing stuff and then failed. It's like they're from, you know, other era, like 80s and 90s, and they're, I don't know. Oh, God, I don't know. I don't have really
Yeah, I don't know. They're one of the better bands at being able to bring out music now that doesn't seem overly dated. Like, I don't know, a good example of that would be, like, I don't know, Paul McCartney keeps bringing out stuff, and Paul McCartney obviously was great back in his prime, but I think he should stop. Same, like, when they're trying
it
to,
like,
even Michael Jackson's
Bon Jovi
death, they're still trying to bring out albums.
The '90s. Like, when Bon Jovi came back in the early 2000s with, like, It's My Life and stuff, and that was, like, became top 40, even though he was, like, from 20 years earlier or whatever.
Jack, I don't know what you're talking about. Paul McCartney died. I'm joking, please. I'm joking.
Okay,
that was a thing. That was a thing that happened. Remember, I didn't just.
I remember.
Yes. Okay.
Here's
the thing. Here's the thing. While we're on things that Mitch can embarrass himself with, didn't know this was a U2 song. Don't really know too much U2 stuff, so that was kind of my way of gisting out to see like what U2 is really about. Because I think I know their hit singles, and maybe this was one before I was alive. I don't know. Has Glee done?
No, Beautiful Day. You would know Beautiful Day.
Yeah, I know Beautiful Day. I know I've had a couple on my iPod back in the day, but has Glee done any U2 song up until now? Is this the first? And what are other ones like that are notable that Glee has done? Because it seems like U2 is the equivalent of. In my mind, of like the Beatles for bands Glee should cover.
They've done
this is the first U2 song they've done, and then the only other one that they've done was I still haven't found what I'm looking for, as in the Corey tribute for Nationals, which that makes me cry every time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so good. Very, very good version.
Yeah, I don't think they're a band like the Beatles, where I mean they are very big, but I don't think they have their own. Identity as much in terms of like a tribute to the band. If it's the more that the songs are significant to people rather than the concept of the band, though I'm sure some people are really, really into
that's
the band.
That's exactly right.
Well then,
but I think it's particular songs that are important, so it wouldn't be about tribute to the band. Yeah.
Well, I guess, and it kind of shocks me that Glee hasn't done more U2 to what Jack, the Encyclopedia of Glee, has quoted, because to me and. In whatever my musical knowledge may be, I kind of follow a lot of music history as perhaps like three major rock groups that have influenced a lot of music after, which went Beatles, Queen, U2. And it's funny to me that U2 doesn't seem to be as big to everyone else. It's funny to me that I would even think it was that big when apparently it's not, if you know. What you guys are saying is true. So I'm wondering where I got that misconception, but I mean, I at least was head on with the other two bands, right?
They're big, but they're not like
legendary.
They're very big, but not legendary big, I would say.
Do we have a band today that's like, that is the next Beatles and Queen?
I don't think we ever will have a band that is ever as big as them. I mean, there's One Direction, which is
yeah.
Huge,
if you want to talk about the next Beatles, it's One Direction. It's that their position in the world right now with their merchandise, with their like the stuff that they're doing, with the amount of transformation that they've had from their start to where they are now and where they'll potentially go. It's One Direction. Is the next Beatles.
Yeah, I think we should move on because we've gotten into a big. Off the wall discussion.
Yeah, Rachel's okay, plot is a lot more important than you two.
Well, Natalie, what do you think about Rachel's plot in this episode? Get back on track.
I really loved it, and there was like a few aspects of it that I really loved. Number one, can I just say musical numbers? Whole episode. This is probably the best combination of musical numbers and performances, like in any Glee episode, maybe like. The amount, at least to me, like the all of the different songs, except for Kurt's Pink Houses, which was obviously meant to be bad, and then...
That was the best. So that was the best.
Really? Yeah.
Jack?
The climb.
The climb. I wish the climb really happened really bad.
Oh, you're so weird. Anyway,
I really love the climb. Many non-Miley fans love the climb that of my friend group that like despise even today. Like can listen back to that song and jam out to it, and it hurts me that they did such a disservice of like shoving it into like this like crackly out of tuned version. Oh, it was so sad. It was very sad.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, I So her being sick, I mean, I loved her sort of over-dramaticness. I loved, you know, Finn taking her to the doctor and still hanging out with her, even though it's a bit weird, like, that they were still hanging out at this point, I suppose. Like, him trying to take care of her and stuff. I'm like, did they name Jesse purely so that they could have Finn sing Jesse's Girl at this point? Was this like...
We've had that discussion before. I think we came to the conclusion, yes, that they did.
Anyway.
Well, can they spell... I'm confused. Is Jesse male spelled a different way from Jesse female always?
Jesse's Girl, the song, is spelled with the female Jesse, even though it's talking about a man. I don't know why. It just is.
That makes more sense now. Because
the
like,
name is just S-E, like J-E-S-S-E for a guy.
Yeah.
So I guess we can give Glee a little bit of credit and say that they maybe didn't name it after that song because
I think they did. Yeah. Anyway.
Sure they did.
It's too perfect. It really is.
A few things about that. I loved that Corey, like I loved that Finn did that song even though it was ridiculous. I hate that Schuster praised him for it and was like, yeah, good job. Good job for expressing your feelings. Like this isn't destructive and weird at all. That performance really made me miss Corey a lot. Like, it really got to me. But, yeah, so I kind of loved his part in all of that, and obviously taking Rachel to then see Sean, which was the big, big part of the episode where, you know, she met Finn's friend who was paralyzed at football, and then, you know, he kind of told her about how bad things got for him and how he's, you know, still alive and it's not going to be the end of everything for him. Really loved that that plot. Really loved kind of what Rachel learned from it. And a couple of things about that. That actor, the actor of Sean, I don't know what his name is, but I do know and I kind of checked it again. He is really a paralyzed actor. And so that was a nice opportunity, I guess. Yeah, he's real quadriplegic or at least a paraplegic. And he'd always He had been acting, I think, before that or wanted to do acting. But, yeah, so they sort of gave him that opportunity. And something I was thinking about is I would really actually like to imagine this character as a long-term friend of Rachel's, like someone that she's maybe still in touch with. And I think this would be a fantastic character to return to in season 6 if she's back in Lima. And seeing him visit, you know, seeing her visit him, not like, oh, it's the first time I've seen you in 6 years, but like show that they have been in touch and, you know, especially after Finn's death and stuff like that. And I was just watching it, bawling my eyes out, imagining her, still being friends with this guy. And I think that could work really well for season 6 and it would actually be really good. But anyway, that was and I was like, imagining this and like losing my shit, like crying. So that was that.
Well,
was
we can hope,
there.
Natalie. But I really, all analogies to Glee's writing room aside, assume that even I think like a reasonable, very canon heavy show that goes back and looks at its stuff wouldn't think to go back to a moment like this. I think that this is so minor in this grand scheme of things because it was never mentioned, thought about, and didn't even affect Rachel. She moves on and is the same diva after this moment. And I mean, it really didn't feel that was something that was significant enough in the timeline of Glee to come back. I would love it too. I love this plot. I don't think that a show thematically would benefit from going back to a moment like this, especially when they'd moved on so past that and Rachel's had, you know, so many more diva moments that it doesn't really seem like this relationship should have
really
benefited her.
I'm not really talking about like the light, like, you know, bringing her back from a diva moment, just as a character moment in terms of it being, you know, Finn's friend and everything like that. And just someone that, you know, it sounded like that she would have a carrying on relationship with. I think that, you know, if she's back living in Lima, that it would be, you know, it would be really, really well done.
I can give you more credit by you mentioning that, yes, he's Finn's friend, and that could be a good tie-in to what's current in Rachel's life and a good way to bring back some really good memories for Glee fans of when Finn was a central plot in moving Rachel or changing Rachel via his friend. So maybe we can cross our fingers. You never know.
I don't necessarily think it will happen either. I mean, that's what like fan fiction's for. I'm just saying I think it's a really cool thing to, you know, to think about, that I would love to see it, but it's also something that I am just going to imagine about Rachel anyway, that she is, like, long-term friends with this guy. And does,
although Glee has listened to Glee Chat, as we've unofficially confirmed, because they have taken obscure things that we've mentioned and brought them into the show, legitimately.
I don't think that they have.
No, they really don't. Anything. But, like, but if this was one of those moments, I would... Many a claps for you, Natalie.
I really hope with season three.
I think
with season six, sorry, Jack, I would really appreciate if there is someone like going back and doing like a full rewatch of season 1 to 5 in order to make season six really tight, if you know what I mean. Like to kind of work out what they can do with it to make it the best it can be. But sorry, Jack, go on.
Yeah. No, I agree. I wish they wouldn't have to do that, but it'd be good if they did. But it would be really good if Sean did come back for season six, especially based on the plot on this episode mirroring the plot like of Rachel over seasons 1 through 5. How like the biggest problem with a lot of these characters is greed, which is very evident in Rachel and Kurt's storylines. But I feel like the greed got the better of Rachel, which made her look pretty much hit rock bottom at the end of. Well, which is going to be the start of season six, pretty much. And I feel like going back and talking to Sean could really get her back on track in terms of she did lose everything based on her own selfish motivations. And I think that could get her back on track at least for season six. And he would be a good vehicle for that to happen.
Yeah, even if it was just one episode.
It would be a different character to pull back, but... Yeah, it would work really, really well. Caitlin, what do you think?
I'm going to be in the minority here. I didn't love this story. I don't know, something just felt off to me while I was watching it. And I had a vague recollection of the ending of that he got really pissed at her when he realized her voice came back, and then that didn't happen, and I was really surprised. Because for some reason, I had remembered that. So I was clearly taking from something else I had watched and put it on there. But I don't know, it just felt...
Like Caitlin,
it was a little over-the-top preachy for me, which just kind of made me uncomfortable, and like, I love it.
Jack, do you have a bit of lag?
Yeah, no, Caitlin. So I think I might, yeah... Okay.
For anyone just give me a second. Yeah. Just for anyone listening, we don't attempt to interrupt each other. Just sometimes there is lag, and so it sounds like we've started talking over the top of someone, when to us it sounds like there's a break. Sorry about that. Just wanted to clarify that for anyone who ever yells at us about interrupting.
I'm here now. Okay. Well, I was going to say to you, Caitlin, how you thought that he got pissed at her at the end. For some reason, I always think in this episode that this is going to sound really weird, but it ends with him like laying in the bed and just screaming. And I don't know where I'm getting that from, because I don't watch many shows, like many hospital dramas. I mean, for a while there, I did watch Grey's Anatomy, but like I don't know. We might be thinking of the same thing, because I really did have a different. Like, I mean, I know that this isn't what happened, but there's always a slight thought in the back of my mind that that is what happened in this episode. I have no idea why. So, I don't know. If someone can tell us if there's, like, an episode of a show where something like that happens, please, because I would be really curious as to why I think that, at least.
Well, Caitlin...
I'm so glad I'm not alone.
Caitlin, the first thing that comes to mind is Pushing Daisies, the one kid who doesn't have a heart, apparently, and is, like, kind of, like, mean about it. And that's the closest thing I can reference. But, I mean, he does. Sean, in this episode of Glee, does reference the fact that he used to scream in bed and be really frustrated. So perhaps you guys just had a really strong mental image from that moment that he described that you assumed that it was on film.
Maybe.
I don't know, I just had this memory in the back, faint memory, like when he's like, oh, so your voice came back? I just had this moment where I thought he was going to be like, get out or something, and then it didn't happen. I was like, weird.
I had a memory this episode, which I remember having the first time I watched it. I had a thought, and then the second, like, I probably watched it a few times back then, but the first time I watched it, and then now on this rewatch, same thing. Throwing back to the Puck storyline, the Quinn and Mercedes bit where they're talking at Mercedes' locker when Quinn's like, yeah, just go ahead, if you know what I mean. She was kind of like, oh, like, I'm not, like, Quinn basically is telling her that it's okay, but that, you know, she was like, I know I can handle this, like, with Quinn, like, I know I can handle this. And then she goes on to say, yeah, but, like, nothing's going to keep Santana away from you, which we'll talk about when we talk about the music very, very briefly, because obviously they had that duet. Remember the very, very first time I saw it, and in this rewatch, I thought Quinn was going to say, like, I'm handling this pregnancy, but you won't be able to handle a teen pregnancy if he knocks you up, if you know what I mean, before he says, she says the thing about Santana. For some reason, the phrasing made me think that she was going to be like, I don't want you to get in the same situation I'm in.
Totally.
Thought it the first time, and I thought it rewatching this time as well.
It's
and I was
funny.
Just like, why?
You guys are reminding me of, like, this one internet horror story of people that all remember watching the same Pirates Cove was the show. It was made up. And it was kind of like the story was in the form of like message boards. So people were running back and forth saying like, oh yeah, do you remember the puppets are kind of creepy? There was this one episode where everyone kind of just stared at the screen and screamed the whole time. And then it turned out in the end that dun dun dun, parents would be like, why did you watch Static so much as a kid? And so they're all like, you know, watching some kind of ghost TV show. But like what Jack and Caitlin were talking about, where like he was like screaming and like their alternate universe, it's the first thing that came to my head. So I'm kind of creeped out right now. It's really feeling like you guys are having some like Pirates Cove moment here where everyone's just screaming at your television and you don't know what's really going on. Or
All right, let's move on quickly away from that before someone starts getting a haunted iPod or something. So yeah.
With you two songs made downloading on there without your control.
Oh,
Jack, do you want to? Sorry, yeah. Was there any other points about the episode, or do you want to just quickly finish off with the quotes and moments?
No. Yeah, we can just quickly run through the moments and quotes because obviously we've got the next episode and a tiny bit of news to get to. So I'll start off with my favorite moment. Really, I mean, we've spoken about it before, but Mercedes bringing the truth to Puck. Mercedes right now has been a great... I've been really enjoying rewatching her for reasons I've said before, so it's really nice to see her have some really genuine human moments, and yeah, it just makes me look forward to actually rewatching these series in a new light with Mercedes, because I didn't, you know, I didn't like her that much in the past. So, yeah, Caitlin, you've got a similar thing to me as well.
Yeah, I kind of second that. I just really love how much self-respect she's showing, and she's just like, especially at the end when she quits the Cheerios, because she's like, this isn't me, I'm gonna be myself, and I'm like, you go girl. I love her, she's great in this episode.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
Mine was for all that I don't like Kurt's behavior, I mean, I do feel him emotionally, I don't think it's justified, but I get it. Regardless of all of that, I really loved the bit where he was trying to emote to Sue, like when Sue, you know, kind of stops and talks to him and he tries to genuinely talk about his problems to her, and she's kind of like, well, I'm not going to do this again because this has been a waste of time. She's like, good luck with your troubles, and I've learned not to talk to students because it's been a colossal waste of time. And just, I mean, she said some kind of weird things to him about, you know, whether he's really gay or not, and that wasn't great. But I don't know. I love the Kurt and Sue relationship. I always have. I always will. And I just found it hilarious. And again, this is another... Yeah. You know what Kurt is like right now? He's like... Are all of you very familiar with The Simpsons? Obviously. I mean, I assume so.
Oh, yeah. To get the reference you're probably about to make.
He's like Martin Prince in Bart's Class. Martin Prince is like, he's so delusional. Like, no matter how much he gets knocked down, he's always still just like himself. And he's like, la, 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 this is all fine, if you know what I mean. Like, he's absolutely, like, he doesn't even realize that, like... you know, stuff is external, and for some reason, yeah, Kurt talking to Sue here reminded me of Martin Prince, you know, being completely delusional in The Simpsons. But anyway, it always amuses me, Kurt and Sue.
Mitch?
So, my moment is when Rachel's singing my heartbreaking version of The Climb, and Brittany is just kind of sitting along with the rest of the crowd that everyone else is like, kind of like, I mean, Finn's got kind of just like, is this really Rachel? And then Brittany's just like, mm-hmm, oh yeah, she's getting into it. She's digging The Climb, you know? And this is like probably the best song she's heard.
Oh, Oh, Brittany.
That's cute. It was probably one of my favorite Brittany moments I can remember.
Like, speaking of Brittany, we kind of skimmed over Kurt and...
Yeah. Okay, so Natalie, you said they didn't have sex. I'm not so sure. I feel
they didn't have sex.
I feel like that there might have... from the way she was kind of cropping a feel and from how much they were just making out, that Brittany might have made a bigger move than Kurt felt comfortable with, but he wouldn't have stopped her because he was trying to prove to himself that this was a thing that he was okay with. My headcanon said that, and it's more disturbing than what I think yours may be. But Natalie, what do you think really happened here?
I just think they were making out. It was very kind of gentle. It was very just like, oh, we're just going to gently kiss. Oh, what do boys' lips taste like? It was weird all over. Kurt putting that sign on the door was just...
Didn't she say... I wonder... Okay, I wonder in the very least if she didn't at least try and get him to, like, eat her armpits. Because that was a thing that she likes.
Stop. Mitch, shut up. Stop. I just don't know. Anyway, I hate the Kurt and Brittany thing. And it's so bad and awkward and just...
Oh, but you know it's a fandom ship. You know everyone is kind of going crazy in that fandom right now if they're listening to this episode of Glee Chat. Like, they're the most legitimate.
No, it's really not.
Oh, come on. Rule 42 of the internet, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, people wouldn't legit ship rule it. 34. I will tell
34, that's it.
I will tell you that in terms of ships that make Kurt straight in some way, the big ones would be with Rachel, and there was quite a lot of people that shipped Kurt and Quinn together as well for a while. I don't know why, but
I don't know that they interact like ever. People tend to do that with Quinn and people that she doesn't interact
with. Everyone.
It's just like I still don't. I only half get. Isn't it February?
No.
It just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't feel like Quinn interacts with Rachel enough. February. Yeah. I don't know. It's just weird.
Nah, I'm a pretty big February shipper. I love Quinn and Rachel. all right, so moving on to the favorite quotes. I'm going to change mine here on the spot. It comes from like a cut scene, and then Puck just turns around to Mercedes and he's... What?
Cut scene. Did you say?
I didn't. What do you say?
I don't know what's going on.
Are you talking about a scene that was not actually in the episode?
Oh, no, sorry. I meant, like, a scene, like, a new scene. I thought you said something else.
Jack, like, I feel like you're referencing more, like, cutscene as one word that's more of, like, a video game term. Like, in the middle of gameplay, you'll have a cutscene that's, like, the drama.
Well,
I thought you were talking about
a cutscene as in a scene that was not in the actual episode, like a rejected scene.
I can see where you heard that, yeah.
No, sorry, I'm talking about, like, the beginning of a new scene. But then when you said cutscene, I thought you said something else. I was like, what?
Go on.
All right, my favorite quote is from when, like, the start of a new scene is when Puck just turns around in Mercedes and goes, girl, you got more curves than that Nissan ad. And it's just the way he delivers that line was just perfect. It was so funny.
It was horrible.
Caitlin?
Mine was from the beginning of the episode when... Puck and Santana are talking, and Puck is like, I feel like that guy who lost all his strength when he got his hair cut, and Santana's like, Samson, and Puck just goes, Agassi.
The writing was really, really funny in this episode, and yeah, I was after, I had Mercedes when she was, when Puck was first trying to hit on her, and she was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to ask you to stop because I'm starting to get embarrassed for you, which was true. Really hilariously true. I always really, really also liked Kurt's, like, I'm not a box, there are more than four sides to me, except for the fact that in context, it was not a very good defense of his ridiculousness, if you know what I mean. As a general statement to the world, beautiful. In context, he was being an idiot, so yeah.
Okay, so I just have to ask for anyone else who may not know. Mitch? Listening, Agassi is who?
Andre Agassi is a really famous tennis player.
Andre Agassi.
Okay, wait, he's the man with kind of like ear-length hair, and he's like the main tennis player that everyone in the world roots for, right?
He's not back still in the practicing. Day. He's not still practicing at all, but he was famous when we were kids.
Okay, because I can kind of imagine what he looks like, and I always just remember, like, relearning his name every time and always forgetting it. So perhaps I literally just, like, missed, or I didn't pay attention to tennis whatsoever to even know who he was. But was there a thing with, like...
Well, he has a shaved head now.
So he had really long hair for a while, and then he shaved it.
Okay, because I can think of him on, like, the tennis video game covers where he'd, like, have his, like... signature hair, and you'd be like holding the tennis bat with both hands, right? Like it's hard to describe.
What year were you born in?
92.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on, shall we?
All right,
Mitch.
All right.
What's your quote?
Yeah, mine's when Rachel's talking to Zeiss in the hallway, trying to get the plan for.
God, she's so good.
So they're trying to get the plan to get the secret recording devices in the Glee Club room so Rich can figure out who's not participating. And in the middle of the deal, there's this kind of like, you know, extra that starts walking up the stairwell that they're in. And Zeiss is just like, who is this guy? Who is this guy? And Rachel's face is just like looking at her like, it is just, it's
that was my quote. It's so funny.
It's early Zeiss at its finest.
She's so good.
Zeiss is just so gold. Good. She's especially in the beginning of the show. She like knocks it out of the park. I love everything about Ashley Fink when she's just like given these short little moments to just like steam seal. She almost stole the show for me. She was that funny. In the way she's like looking at Rachel with like, does she have the Snickers bar? And she's like, yeah.
Okay, let's quickly move on to this part. Oh, yeah, go on, Jack.
Oh, sorry. Well, I was just moving on to the song list. But...
Yeah, very quickly, yeah. Do you want to just go through? Because we've talked about some of them, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, well, just before we move away from the quotes and moments, I just want to say, yes, Super Mario Brothers did change civilization, and yes, the Star Wars is what made Super Mario 3 great. Just wanted to say, Mitch, I hope you appreciate
that. Can I just say something about Super Mario Brothers that I don't know, is Super Smash Brothers the same thing? Or is it in the same art?
No. It sounds like it isn't for a reason.
We could talk a lot about Super Smash Brothers.
Oh, yes, we could. That's...
Let's not. I just wanted to say that the longest piece of writing in the entire world, as in the longest written story or book or anything like that, is a Super Smash Brothers Brawl fan fiction.
I think I heard that before. That makes sense because the game is like every Nintendo character coming together to fight. But it doesn't make sense because the characters don't really interact.
I have it, Jack. It's talk. Just something on Tumblr, but allegedly it's true. And I would believe it, because people are crazy. Anyway, go
that
on.
Sounds like a wives' tale of the internet, you know?
I hope it's not. But anyway, let's...
Oh, you hope it's true?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope it's true. It's funny.
Yeah. And yes, right, so Jack, I did appreciate your moments list. That you
were... We've already discussed a few of these.
The lack strikes again. Jack, I did appreciate
the
moment.
Yeah, we've already discussed a few of these, so...
Jack, I appreciated the moments you were mentioning, yes, about Puck saying that Super Mario Bros. Changed civilization. Okay, now I'm good.
Okay.
Everyone shoot at Jack.
All right, so we've already discussed really the climb, Jess's girl, pink houses. We didn't really focus too much on Lady is a Tramp, but it was so great. If I was to list a few of my favorite police songs, this would
so
be up
good.
There.
Fuck, it's so good. I'm sorry, but yeah. I have so much fucking feelings about this. It was so good, and he looks so happy and chill, and it's just I have wanted so long for him to do more swing songs on the show. I have a dream that I don't know if any of you have ever seen High Society, like the Bing Crosby Frank Sinatra 50s movie. Anyway, probably not. There's a song in that called Well Did You Ever, which is like a swing classic, and it was a duet between Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby, like their two characters. And I've always wanted Puck to do that, probably with Blaine, maybe. As like it's like a not a spoken but like a communicated duet, and he's so good at this, and you know, you don't really look at Mark Salling as Puck and think, oh yeah, he would be a great stage performer. You know, his own independent music as Mark Salling is very kind of like, you know, guitar coffee house thing, but watching this I'm like, I want to see him on Broadway in like a 40s role or something. Like I want to see him in a Cole Porter musical. Like he would be good, and his eyelashes are beautiful as well, and I love this. Sorry. Anyway,
now, Natalie, to rebut where you're coming from. Verbut, I suppose, is a better word. I like this song a lot. I really like Mercedes's runs. I think they're beautiful. I think that they meld together, their voices, really well, much as we were talking about how April and Will's do. I do not like Puck's falsetto. I think that it comes off as forced, and he didn't seem to have a very natural sound to when he's singing, and I'm not sure if that's coming from some kind of auto-tune, or maybe he's not a professional singer whatsoever. And it had me thinking, what does Mark Salling have in his past of musical theater performance? Was he on Broadway before Glee, or was
never.
So this was like
this was his first non sort of rock, you know, top 40 song. That he would have done, non-guitar-based song.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I do like his voice in other songs. I actually like his voice in every other aspect of the song, except for when he holds a note, but his enunciation and his kind of attitude that you're talking about is great. I am always reminded when I think back to this song and others, isn't it Beth that he sings to Quinn's baby, that the songs fall flat because they don't feel... I'm trying to put this lightly because I know you guys are big fans of Puck, at least Natalie and Caitlin. I just don't like it.
Not Caitlin.
Caitlin, I thought, okay, was that irony when someone said...
Hey, whoa.
Caitlin, was that irony when Jack said that you're the biggest fan of Puck, or are you really not?
I am not the biggest fan of Puck.
Okay, got it.
Natalie is, obviously, and so am I.
All right. So, I don't know. Does anyone else see those falsetto issues? That he has
I didn't even really hear any time in the song that he was using falsetto. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Give it a listen back, and maybe with a new set of ears, you'll like be listening for it. But I don't want to poison anyone's liking of a song. Mm-hmm. I used to like it before. I listened to it now, and I just heard something I didn't like. But I do think this is one of the most unique songs Glee's ever done, because it's kind of... You're right, Natalie, of a really unique swing age that Glee doesn't really touch on too often.
More Rat Pack songs on Glee, forever. More Rat Pack songs, series. I love, like, this. Yeah. So, yeah, more swing on Glee, always, forever. Anyway, carry on.
It's Not Unusual is great, too, if
all
I'm
right,
thinking
so the next few songs... Yeah, so the next few songs are The Boy Is Mine by Santana and Mercedes. I mean, that was good, pretty good, unless anyone's got any opinions about that.
They sound good together. Don't really understand why Santana don't really understand why Santana gives so much of a shit, if you know what I mean. I know that she doesn't know she's a lesbian at this point, but, like, is she just, like, you know, pissed that someone has taken something that was hers or what? Because I don't really understand why she cares, but they do sound pretty good.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's like being a grumpy child. It's like being a grumpy child, like, they've taken what she had, so now she has to fight for it back, you know? Like, that's mine, you don't get to have it.
They end up having better duets, but this is the start of a beautiful duet ship.
Well, does anyone know of the original Brandy version?
Yeah.
Have you guys listened to it, kind of like growing up
because
or something?
We're born in the... Because we grew up in the frickin' 90s, Mitch, unlike you. Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty 2000s, but...
I remember that song coming out. Like, yes.
Well, my question is then, is it always between two people, or did they turn it into a duet past the phone call?
Duet. No, it's a duet. It was Brandy and Monica.
So Monica was whom? Would I know her from, like, was she in, like, Lady Marmalade or something? I don't know.
What, Mitch, do you think she's just talking to herself on the phone?
I mean, at least I, like, present a unique perspective on not knowing the stuff. Because I'm sure there are other listeners like me growing up in the 2000s that weren't, like, really up on this. I don't count Jack.
No, Mitch.
I don't
Brandy,
know, Mitch,
I know Brandy from the ABC Cinderella special. That's it.
Okay, no. This song, definitely a duet between two people. Brandy and Monica. Don't really remember who Monica was, but the song was Monica's song. Brandy was the guest star. It wasn't Monica. It was Monica feat Brandy. It was not
That's funny.
Brandy feat Monica.
The reason that's funny to me is because I don't think history's done too well to Monica, unfortunately, because when I put on subtitles for these episodes and it said Brandy's The Boy's Mind comes on, I was like, oh, this is a Brandy song.
Oh, right. Actually, no, sorry, I stand corrected. It was actually released as the lead singer from both singers' albums, so they both got to put it on their album, which seems weird, but I suppose that's nice.
Is that a thing? You can do that? I thought someone apparently had a claim ownership, unless it was like... I don't even know. That's weird. Cause like,
anyway, yeah. I don't know, Mitch. I know other people who are, you know, same age as you who know that Paul McCartney is not dead, if you know what I mean.
That was just like a historical mistake. Like, I think anyone of any age could have made that mistake just as easily.
Really?
Without
I
being...
Really could have... I don't think so, Mitch.
Because it wasn't that I was thinking of Paul McCartney. I know that it wasn't. It was John Lennon. But it was literally just I messed up their names. It wasn't that I knew who I was thinking of visually. It was just, I knew that they were kind of like, oh yeah, those back in the day kind of rock stars, right, yeah. And I just totally flubbed it.
Anyway,
Mitch, I have a question for you that I'd be really disappointed if you didn't know the answer to. Do you know who Mick Jagger is? Just asking.
I know Mick Jagger was rumored to be Kesha's father, and she sings about him in TikTok, and I know he's some kind of rocker, and that's the most I have.
Fucking serious.
Do you know what band he's from?
Are you serious right now?
Okay, I'm gonna guess, and everyone's just gonna like hate this, but I'm gonna guess Rolling Stones.
I'm lying.
Yes, thank you. Okay, yes. Good. He's the lead singer of the Rolling Stones.
Wow.
Given that you guessed, that's pretty pathetic. And he's not rumored to be Kesha's father. She wants to sleep with him.
Yes, I know, and that was the thing that was so weird about it, that I could have sworn that I was reading, you know, like, you know, tabloid crap about her at the same time of like, wants to sleep with him is her father? Question mark?
No.
That makes me really upset about today's society, that the only thing you could say about Mick Jagger was that apparently there was a room in Kesha's father.
Jack, I don't think that's common for most people. I think Mitch has some sort of problem. Like, like you know who Mick Jagger is, and you're like 5 years younger than him.
No, Jack.
No, but I'm in person.
I think Jack's only 3 years younger than me.
19
right?
Next month.
Yeah, I'm 22.
Anyway, Jack, I don't. The thing I don't really understand is I understand that, you know, as each generation goes on, we know like less and less about what came before. But people like, you know, Jagger, the Beatles, you know the history of David Bowie, you know, all of that kind of thing, Queen. It's still all, like, it happened to my generation before we were born as well, if you know what I mean. Like, it's the same kind of osmosis. Like, it's not like it was current for us and then forgotten for you. I mean, Brandy and Monica was current for us, but, you know, Mick Jagger wasn't current for us just as much as it wasn't current for you. So I don't understand how, like, so much get lost when it's all just stuff that happened. You know, if we've managed to pick it up, how do future generations not manage to pick it up? Because I understand... you know, knowing about something from your time and then other people not knowing about it. But what about when it's stuff that was from before your time as well, if you know what I mean?
Well, I think that a lot of that comes from just, like, word of mouth dying along with that and, like, new artists or, if we want to go farther to say, like, new technologies or something will kind of erase in the pop culture what people talk about. They'll replace and... take over completely.
Yeah, I think,
and I think
you're probably able to tailor what you are exposed to a lot more. Even stuff like Tumblr, you're at like the one of the reasons I dislike Tumblr as a medium is you're able to filter it so much that you only see things that you want to see, or you only see opinions that you agree with, as opposed to seeing the bigger picture. Mm. And I think that might be doing people a disservice, yeah. Actually.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you bring that
and
up,
that's
Natalie.
Exactly
like
what I said before,
that's
exactly what I said before about how like my frustration with Kurt and people in general is how people just see what they want to see and disregard anything else that could contradict their belief. And that's called, like, I think that's called confirmation bias. I think that's what that's called.
Well, I think that what you're saying...
isolation.
I think what you're saying, Jack, is perhaps a little bit harsher than what I'm about to say, is that I think that people can have, like, different tastes of music, and that perhaps Jack, I don't know, really, but perhaps Jack, and hypothetically, is an anomaly of our generation that him and I are both in, where he knows a lot about classic rock and would know easily that Mick Jagger is the leader of Rolling Stone.
I don't think so. I mean, he's still... I'm not that interested in the Rolling Stones, but I know, if you know, and it's... not like it was that far. You know, it was still, it still happened in the 60s, and I was still born in like the late 80s. So I don't really,
And you know what I think a really good parallel for all this is, Natalie? It's really perplexing to me that Disneyland is as popular as it is with such young children who were not alive for Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Beauty and the Beast. Like, think of the typical seven-year-olds. How in the hell would they have known about all these pop culture icons?
Well, they still get... That's the thing, Mitch. Those movies still get given to children.
And it's weird because it gets even odder to me when I start thinking of things like, I don't know, like I can't think of too many, like, other than like House of Mouse on Disney Channel that like Mickey Mouse and Donald and Goofy were all in, but like that generation all knows very much about, like,
yeah,
I want to,
well,
be Minnie Mouse.
Same with my generation as well. There's nothing particularly like it. Anyway, I don't really.
It's just really strange to me. I don't get how culture works.
Yeah,
to let
I think
us
we should move on.
Yeah, yeah.
Please.
We made our point here. That's confusing.
Yeah.
So I cut out for a bit, but how many songs did we get to discuss? And did we get up to Rose's Turn and one? Or
no,
do we want to move
yet.
On
not
to the
yet.
Next
just,
episode?
No, Rose's
okay.
Turn we didn't
right,
talk about yet. But...
Yeah, well, Rose's Turn was Kurt's big number. And obviously in the song, it's Glee's example of changing words to suit the plot. Like, they did it with, I know specifically they did it with Billionaire, they just changed a few of the names to suit the Glee Club members. And they did it with this, like, if it wasn't for me, now where would you be? Miss Rachel Berry? I think that's what it is. Everything's coming
to make
Kurt.
Sense.
No, it doesn't make sense whatsoever.
I know.
Because she's not related to this plot at all.
Anyway,
She's not even famous yet. Like, you know, she's not even...
I think it just rhymes, and maybe the original... What's the original lyric? They probably wanted to avoid something that would confuse the Glee viewer, I suppose. I don't
well,
know.
It wouldn't. I mean, if he just sung the song as it was, the original lyric is... It's everything's coming up Rose. Everything's coming up roses. Everything, like, because the character's name is Rose. And he even says to his dad, that was Rose's turn, if you know what I mean. Like... Maybe he was singing it out loud as the real version, but in his head it was like him singing about himself, because he did say to his dad, that was Rose's turn, if you know what I mean, and he didn't say Rose once in the song.
And you know what's really interesting about that, Natalie? Until I rewatched this episode of Glee to see it with subtitles, having not even known the song outside of Glee, I could have sworn that instead of saying everything's turning up Kurt, he was saying everything's turning up roses. So I think that that's just... That's just an odd testament to maybe, like, some subliminal way
it's
of...
It's a really famous song.
Well, that's the thing, and I'm saying because...
And it still had the same message, if you know what I mean.
Yes, it's famous. Yes, it's not from the same... It didn't occur in the same generation as I, but my focus has been a lot on Broadway, so it's kind of... That makes sense that I would see that, kind of going back to our old thing. But it was legitimately shocking to me that he was singing Everything's Coming Up Kurt. That was really weird.
I think it was unnecessary. I don't know, but I don't know. What do you think, Caitlin?
I was rolling my eyes through the whole thing, because it's clearly supposed to be this big triumphant moment where Kurt's like accepting, like taking power or whatever. And I'm just going, the whole context of this situation is so his own fault and totally unnecessary. So I just cannot get behind this being a triumphant moment.
Yeah, I think I agree. Yeah, exactly. I really liked it, like, objectively the first time, but yeah, I think it is... I have less sympathy for him, so whatever.
Yeah. And that's interesting about the rewatch, is, like, different opinions that we can have on different characters and stuff. Okay, so the last song and the last number of the episode was One by U2. We've already discussed it a bit, but this song, as I said, it is my third favourite song of all time. Like, I know my list... And, like, this is my third. The meaning of this song is... I love it so much. It's just... musically, like, the original musically, it's a fantastic written song. Lyrics are perfect. And, like, the delivery of, like, a lot of the dynamics and stuff in the song, it's just... All of it comes to one, and And it's a great song. It's really fantastic. Did you guys have any opinions about this song? Anyone?
I really love this performance and have come to love the song. Like, this performance really made me pay attention to the lyrics, and I've come to really appreciate the song, like, and the message of it. I'm quite curious as to what your number one and two favorite songs are.
Number two is Somebody to Love by Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And then number one is a bit of an obscure, a bit of a different one. It's Roads Untraveled by Linkin Park. And that's what I have as a tattoo above my left of my chest. Like,
okay.
Oh, that's what that tattoo is. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like I should have known that, but no, it's kind of like you always just seem to Snapchat out yourself waking up in bed for Glee Chat with, like, this tattoo on your chest. I'm like, what?
Okay. You make that sound really bad, Mitch. You make that sound terrible.
It's like a thing. It's like, remember, Jack, when I was mimicking you and I was just, like, trying to be you? I had that dreamy, like, I'm just waking up face. You always, like, the first thing you wake up and do
dreamy,
is...
Dreamy, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, dreamy and, like, I was just waking up kind of way, and you guys never come off like that when you were waking up in Australia early for Glee Chat, but... I could definitely see it in your face.
Everyone in Australia just wakes up perfect. Flawless,
yes.
Beyonce.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
All right, so if we're done with that episode, we've gone quite far, but I think, Natalie, you're taking on Dream On.
Yep. Yeah, so just, guys, I'm gonna power through this one relatively quickly, obviously, because I want to be finished in an hour, hopefully. I kind of wanted to be finished by now, but, yeah, If everyone's okay to go through this one, we'll quickly go. I think Laryngitis was more of an important episode than this one. It was just a bit, you know, not as much discussion. Fine. But let's try and not get off on any tangents and just, you know, I'll try and throw the questions out and bring them back. Anyway, all right, so the next episode we're covering is Dream On 119, which actually follows directly on from Laryngitis. And in this one we have Brian Ryan, which is played by Neil Patrick Harris. He's an old Glee Club alum, and he arrives at McKinley as a school board auditor. He has, like, big plans to cut the arts programs because of his own crushed dreams, and his talk with the club leads the students to question whether their hidden dreams, what those dreams really are. Tina discovers that Artie's dream is to be a dancer, and she fills his head with new dreams of walking again, and Jesse gets Rachel to admit that she wants to know her mother. Jesse helps Rachel in starting to research that situation, but we learn that he already knows who it is, that it's Shelby. Shelby is Rachel's mum, and Jesse has been planted, you know, near Rachel and at McKinley to lead Rachel to Shelby. He puts a tape from Shelby among Rachel's baby things to make Rachel even more desperate to find her. Meanwhile, Brian Ryan fluctuates between loving and hating the Glee Club due to his own mixed feelings as a failed performer. He reinstates the club when Will encourages him to audition for Les Mis and then takes it away again when Will gets the lead. He reinstates it once and for all when Will just gives him the lead role. And then after some attempted out-of-chair dancing and a dance dream sequence and some real talk with Emma, Artie accepts that for now he won't work, walk or dance, and Tina goes on to perform their planned dance number without him. So that's the Dream On episode, which was quite... you know, touted at the time as being pretty big due to the Neil Patrick Harris factor.
And the Joss Whedon factor.
Oh, Joss Whedon directed this episode, and I totally forgot that until right now, because at the moment I'm trying to repress Joss Whedon's existence. So, yeah.
And this has to be tied into the Dr. Horrible business, because they were teamed up for that too, and that was musical, so it makes sense that...
Well, yeah, they definitely know each other, yeah, Neil Patrick Harris and Joss, so yeah, it's probably, you know, one came with the other.
Yeah, exactly.
But Ryan, Neil Patrick Harris, what did you guys think of that character? Like, and is there any truth in his, like, statements to the club about, you know... I mean, it's a bit harsh to face up to, but, like, you know, are the kids deluding themselves about all being stars? Like, what would be the right attitude to take to these kids? Caitlin, what did you think of this guy, of Brian Ryan?
I love him so much.
I knew you would.
He's so obnoxious. He's just fun to watch. And he's so ridiculous and over the top in a way that's hilarious. And I mean, I think he... has a point that not everyone is going to be a star, and what are the chances that any of them are going to become stars out of this podunk little Ohio town? But
yeah.
He, you know, there's really no reason to be as cynical as he got, which, you know, because he failed himself, he has to pass that on to everybody else, and clearly everybody else is going to fail, because if Brian Ryan couldn't succeed, then nobody will.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed him a lot. I think he's great.
I really loved his flashback, the flashback of singing Daydream Believer and Will kind of watching. That moment of Will, teenage Will, awkwardly watching is probably my favorite Will moment in the entire series. I'm like, you freaking nailed that. That was amazing. And like, it's probably my favorite Will moment in all of Glee.
But what great costuming and makeuping in that moment, too. They just, they really made it.
Oh, it's so bad. Amazing.
It was great. Bad. And I wanted to like just like kind of freeze frame and just look at the outfits of everyone around them because it was incredible. I mean, and that was me thinking once again, like, if Josh Whedon had any hand in like this part of the episode, I feel like he really wanted to go like above and beyond to make sure that we really knew that this was like the 80s or whatever.
Jack, what did you think of sort of Brian Ryan's introduction and his like characterization? Is he back yet?
I'm back. I love Neil Patrick Harris so much, and that's just from, like, mainly from my obsession with How I Met Your Mother. I think he's just fantastic, and, like, a great just human being in general. But Brian Ryan is so funny. He almost really is, like, how Jesse St. James would be 20 years in the future. Like, he's so over the top and ridiculous, and it's fun. And, like, I don't think that, like, Neil Patrick Harris or Brian Ryan could ever come back to the show, but anything with Neil Patrick Harris in it is gold, you know? Like, he's fantastic. He's just a great person, and yeah.
I mean, what did you think, you guys think of then his ongoing sort of relationship with Will, like, going out drinking and then their audition for Les Mis together? Because I'm like, with the Les Mis bit, I was just like, okay, so Will, you've encouraged him and you've got him on track. Wouldn't the thing here to be to encourage him to audition like for the, you know, for the show, or to make sure you're not auditioning for the lead because you're actually just doing this to encourage him, and you're like, all you're doing is kind of stepping in the way of him, and you know, it's sort of, you've shot yourself in the foot a bit here. So yeah, I mean, what did you guys think of, I guess, his sort of up and down friendship with Will, and how did it make you feel about Will in this episode? Mitch, did you have any Will thoughts?
Well, we all have Will thoughts that our listeners seem to not care for. My Will thoughts were, why in the world would you try out for the play that was and do it so like vehemently to be like, I'm going to be the lead? Like, out of nowhere, when you were the one that was just sing us a song, Mr. Piano Man, you know? Like, yeah. It doesn't even make any sense. Like, there's no logic whatsoever there other than Will decided that he wanted to control and be and do everything and try and once again awaken his dream of not being a star that he wanted to be and trying and like piggybacking off of someone else to do that by singing a killer duo where the other carries the heavier of the vocals but still doesn't win.
Caitlin?
So this is the most likable I've found Will all season, and I think it's because his storyline has nothing to do with romance or like being a teacher at all, so I found him more enjoyable, but I do think that it really is completely illogical for him to audition, but he clearly has this sense of rivalry with Brian Ryan and is like, well, I clearly have to try out too and show that I'm just as good.
Yeah, I mean, I understand him being like, there's a production and we're both going to go audition. But, like, you know, to be there for the moral support and stuff. But, you'd put on your audition sheet, be like, ensemble. Like, don't try out for the frickin' lead when you're doing it to try and, like, make this other guy more chill, if you know what I mean. Like, don't do that. It's just stupid.
And what a horrible
surprise when Brian Ryan said he was auditioning for the lead.
It's like, really?
Well, I think we were surprised just literally as an audience looking at, you know, Will doing Jean Valjean, because that's like the complete opposite of a character I could imagine him being successful at. Like, he's still Link Larkin in my mind, and that's it. Like, he's not that, I don't know how to put it. There's no, I don't think that there's meant to be one word or phrase you can bring together Jean Valjean into, and it's just, it's really strange. I mean, I think, Brian would have made a really cool Jean Valjean because he would have had a lot of good dramatic range to do that. But I feel like Will would have been more of like one tone, like, I'm just so dramatic and brooding all the time and never smile and have fun and like Cosette or anything. But Natalie, what were you going to say about Brian?
I liked the piano man scene, and I liked the concept of the scene in general with, you know, the backing music on and then them just singing along with it, but singing along, you know, well. I think Glee should have had more songs like that where people are singing along with the original, because I always really enjoy that. But, yeah.
Oh, but how awkward was that little, like, half-smirk Will gives to the guy that's drinking the beer? There's a man on the bar sitting next to me making the his tonic, and Jenny's like, hey, guy. And the dude's like, you guys are just freaking weird.
Yeah. So, do you ship Will and Brian Ryan, or do you ship Brian Ryan and Sue in her secret room? What, Will and Brian? I can get behind it, I'm not going to lie.
Maybe Brian Caitlin's should go with Terry.
Get it away from me. Pardon?
Brian and Terry can come back and see. Brian and Terry can come back in season six and be like a nice couple.
Imagine if they were like, yeah, the crazy bitch power couple or something. That would be great, Brian and Terry. It would be great. I did like the bit where he was like, oh, that one girl, you know, Terry Del Mondo, whatever her name was, and Will was like, yeah, she was cool, married her. I was like, it was really, like, I quite liked, like, the way Will acted in that bar scene. The audition just ruined it.
That was a douchebaggy little line, like, oh, yeah, married her. Bagged it. Like, I was like, oh.
It wasn't like that. It was more awkward. It was just like, yeah, she's cool. That's the person I end up married. It wasn't totally awkward, but I don't think it was sleazy either. Like, it was actually quite good. But I don't know. I also, with Brian Ryan, I really enjoyed, like, just at the end when Will, like, gave him the part, and he was like, oh, okay, cool, this is fine. Like, he's really fickle and sort of deluded, if you know what I mean. Like, he's also incredibly highly strung and fickle, so probably shouldn't be in a position of power, like a school board auditor, but yeah.
I don't take direction.
Yeah. Oh, God, he was so good.
How can you feasibly put on a musical if you can only close a laundromat for 30 minutes at a time? That's going to be a horrible production of Wayne Mays.
That's a big question. Yeah. oh, God. Well, who knows? But moving on to Tina and Artie's plot, which is obviously that, you know, she kind of snoops in the bin, at the trash can, at what Artie's dream was, which was apparently...
Oh, Tina.
Oh, yeah.
One day you will vape or rape.
We're going to have some debate here, I'm sure. You know, he tells her that his, you know, dream, you know, once he's accepted he can't be a performer, that he wants to be a filmmaker, which does actually end up sticking, you know, with the entire next five seasons. So, you know, claps for Artie, I guess. But you know, we find out that he, you know, wanted to be a dancer, so... The end result of that was that she, you know, she kind of encouraged him and then did all this research in how he might walk again and then, you know, pushed him to kind of try coming out of the chair and then about, you know, pushed him to get excited about, you know, new treatments. So, you know, where do we place blame here in terms of Artie's, you know, situation? Like, what do we think about the dynamic between these two characters in this episode? I think Tina was quite naive, but, you know, Artie does turn around and sort of blame it on her, and they go very up and down quite a few times. So, Jack, what did you think of this situation?
So, did you say Blaine? Like, what did you say about Blaine?
I didn't say anything about Blaine.
I thought so too, Blaine. Jack. She was referencing blame, like, how Artie had blame or didn't, not how he had Blaine.
Oh, okay. Because I thought you were talking about, like, Tina and Blaine.
Oh, no. Blame. It's like, do we blame Artie for sort of, you know, his eventual disappointment, or do we blame Tina?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack. I probably got your mind in there from the vehicle rape reference, but sorry, go on.
I don't think it's either person's fault entirely. I honestly think it's, like, both of them are both to blame. I don't think it's either... Because, like, obviously Artie is going to be really upset that, like, it turns out he's just... I think... I honestly think it's natural for somebody in his position is to start getting really, really overwhelmed and thinking that all of a sudden there could be a chance that they could get better and, in his case, walk again. But I don't... And just because Tina was the vehicle to have him feel that way, I don't think it makes Tina a bad person necessarily. I think she was just really, really trying to help, because that's all she wants to do is just help him out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was just a blow up because of the situation rather than each one of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I suppose so. Caitlin, what about you with this Tina and Artie plot?
I agree. I think it's a little bit of both and a little bit of nobody. Like, I think Tina's heart was in the right place, but maybe she took that a little too far, and then Artie probably blamed her a little too much when he probably should have known better, but his hope was understandable. So I don't think it was either of their faults completely, and it was both of their faults a little bit too.
Yeah. I think this was kind of a nice, realistic little story, you know, it fit really well, I suppose, into the theme, and it wasn't, you know, over the top and ridiculous. But, I mean, it all probably could have been avoided if Tina didn't, like, take someone else's crumpled, like, situation, you know, crumpled note out of the bin. So, Mitch, do you think that she should have not done that, or do you think that she, you know, was that a bad move?
Well, this I think safely takes away from my favorite quote of the episode, which oddly enough is, "Tina, this is all your fault. You pushed me to do this." And I kind of laugh at that because it fits along with like this kind of scapegoat version of Tina that we've all become very accustomed to in Glee, where everyone and anything is Tina's fault. And I don't think it was whatsoever. I think she was just trying to make Artie's dreams come true. And yes, she was creepy for doing a very creepy Tina-like thing.
Tina's a boundary. Tina doesn't really respect boundaries. I think that's a pretty strong character trait for her. But yeah,
definitely.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but she was just trying to make his dreams come true in the best way she knew possible, not trying to install false hope, literally just being like, this is the scientific evidence that's out that says this may be in the future, and this is the most I know as like a 16-year-old high school student, and I have hope for you, and hope is what builds a better future, in my opinion. So I'm just like, no, Emma wasn't wrong in telling him all of the information she did, but I don't think that Tina was wrong whatsoever in anything that she did other than the crumpled up, like, it's funny too, because that crumpled up moment, and the fact that leads into filmmaker and all that really makes me think once again to maybe like hoping that Joss Whedon had like a big hand in Glee right here, where he was just like, this would be a really cool character, didn't want to actually do like musical theater, but wanted to be a filmmaker. And then the fact that crumpled up note that was just kind of a toss away thing turned out to be a very legitimate plot line was so cool. That really got me excited. Unfortunately, it had to happen through Tina doing it, you know, kind of creepily, but I guess if we're going to have any character do creepy things, it rather than Will, might as well be Tina, right?
Mm-hmm. Suppose that's true. Yeah, Tina definitely, you know, sets herself up. You know, we've got lots of occurrences in the future, you know, whether it's with Blaine and the Vapo rape or sending in Mike's, you know, audition tape and stuff like that, where, yeah, she does definitely cross some lines. But in this one, it was relatively innocent and she was sort of quite naive about it. Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind it too much. I really liked the musical numbers that came out of it, which we'll talk about in a second. Both of Artie's songs were incredible for different reasons. But, yeah, I mean, Rachel's plot was, you know, obviously that she tells Jesse that she wants to find her mother. You know, they kind of make up after their whole, like, Run, Joey, Run situation. Like, you know, and... a really cute scene with him kind of telling her that, you know, being a star isn't her dream, it's an inevitability. Before we get into the, you know, the plot of Jesse and Shelby and Rachel, I just want to mention, you know, she tells Jesse that she has 3 dream Broadway roles, that she plans to, you know, go, you know, to be known for 3 different roles, which is Evita, Funny Girl, so Fanny Bryce, and then Laurie from Oklahoma.
I love that you're bringing this up, Natalie. This was so relevant
wondering if they're going to remember this in any way, you know, if Rachel's plot ends up being that she goes back to Broadway, if you know what I mean, like gets another shot at it, you know, after she establishes the Glee Club and gives it back to Will or gives it to Sam or whatever she's going to do with it. You know, and
Sam,
she's like, no,
please.
TV flopped, we're not going to do that, you know, and then she gets another shot on Broadway, even though she totally let down the people at Funny Girl, whether it would, you know, go back to, you know, because we're hearing here that, you know, obviously Funny Girl, who's her dream be-all and end-all role, but, you know, in this conversation with Jesse, she kind of knows that, obviously every actress knows she can't play one part forever, and she's mentioned hoping to play these 2 other parts as a big, big thing in future. So do you think that they should, you know, have her, the very ending of Glee, going off to star in one of those other 2 shows? Jack?
Maybe. I mean, I'd like to think that Broadway would never take her back just because she got there so easily.
You're like, I want her to be punished
right
forever.
Away. I do. I honestly do. But I don't know if like she will go back to Broadway, but I mean it would be really cool if they did bring this back. I honestly don't really know where Rachel's gonna end up at the end of season 6. I mean, I do like the idea of her going back and teaching the Glee Club, like I've said, how it mirrors Finn and you know, all that, but I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe. There is a chance it could happen.
End game should be, I had a chance, I fucked it up, and now I have to deal with small town life as a consequence. The end.
I probably wouldn't be opposed to that.
Caitlin, what about you?
Ugh, that's terrible, Jack. That's so terrible. I disagree so much, but I could see one of these other roles coming back to be kind of her step up at the very end. I would like that.
Are you a fan of Broadway?
I think this should succeed. Sorry, I think that she should succeed a little. I think she should succeed and you know, be successful again. But I still want her to at least be appropriately punished for what she's done. Yeah.
Oh my god, Jack.
I hate that word so much.
Punished.
30 flogs for Rachel Berry.
Oh,
sorry.
Caitlin, I don't know if you're like a fan of Broadway in general or if you like the music, you know, the other music that Glee does or whatever, but if you do have Broadway roles in mind, if it wasn't one of these two, do you have something in mind you'd like to see Rachel do in the future, or Blaine, or anyone, like a good Broadway role to come up for something? Someone? A character, not one of our real actors.
Oh, my Broadway knowledge is non-existent. Oh,
okay. I didn't know.
I've only ever seen one production on Broadway, that's it. So.
What was it?
Phantom.
Oh, really? Cool. Have they done anything? Yeah, they have. I was trying to think. Yeah, Kurt did that weird thing, didn't he?
Unfortunately, they should do it proper though. Guys, if Rachel did Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again for Finn,
no,
that would be heartbreaking.
No, I don't actually like Phantom, so no.
Would cry my freaking eyes out if she sang that song, and she would be perfect as a Christine. I would love her as Christine.
I don't know if she would be a good Christine.
It just hit me. Like, I never thought of it for some reason, but I really do think she would have, oh my god, she would have just like such fabulous falsetto for those high notes. Oh, I would die. I would die if Rachel, well, I suppose so, but maybe that's one of her roles. Maybe she's not going to get one of her dream roles. Maybe she'll come back as Christine in this business they're doing for the anniversary editions to make it more timely and relevant to what's really going on Broadway. That'd be kind of fun.
Maybe. Speaking of Broadway in this episode, I actually saw Neil Patrick Harris in Hedwig, so that was fun. That was good.
Wasn't he in Sweeney Todd as Tobias at one point when he was an adult? And it was kind of an odd thing for me to like see him.
I don't think so, because I think Hedwig was his Broadway debut.
No, okay, maybe it was like the Tony Awards or something. I remember him just singing to a Mrs. Lovett on stage, and I was really confused because he was obviously like, you know, 35 or whatever, trying to play the role.
Maybe
like,
it wasn't his Broadway debut, because why has he hosted the Tonys so many times?
He has to have had done more roles. Isn't there like a?
You know, he's hosted it. I don't understand why he's hosted it so many times if that was his Broadway debut, but I think it was.
Well, because he's so musical inherently from, like, all of, like, Glee, and then Dr. Horrible, and then How Much Your Mother's doing a lot of musical numbers, that I feel that he crosses the boundaries of, like, pop culture in Broadway just enough to really fit, and he's kind of like that perfect little mixed medium rather than, like, a Broadway star that most people in pop culture wouldn't necessarily know as much as NPH.
Maybe. I'm sure it can't be his Broadway. Anyway, doesn't matter. It was great regardless of whether it was or not. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they let him host the Tonys if he hadn't done that before? No, he's definitely done older shows, but like quite a long time ago. So maybe, yeah, he did do something in Sweeney Todd a long time ago, though, so maybe he reprised it. And he's done smaller theatre. Anyway, moving on from Neil Patrick Harris on Broadway, sorry about that.
I mean, he's a very talented individual, and I think that he really made this episode fantastic, because I think that it'd be really hard to try and prove that he's not just chock full of freaking talent. He's good in a lot of different venues, and not just comedy either. So, and I'm not sure what Hedwig is, but I'm sure he was fabulous in the musical.
Is it
a musical?
It's sort of a musical. It's more of a like concert. Like, so she, the character of Hedwig, kind of is doing a concert for the show, for the crowd, while explaining her life story. It was a movie, and the movie is more of a narrative, but it was amazing. So, yeah.
That kind of sounds like Jersey Boys.
It's not like Jersey Boys at all. No, Jersey Boys acts out the scenes of what had happened. This is framed as a concert, but it's still a theatre show. Like, it's really interesting. But anyway.
Interesting.
You should watch the movie, though. Moving on from Rachel on Broadway, her bigger plot is obviously that she wants to find her mother, and there's lots of little aspects here that are a bit questionable. You know, that Jesse has been, you know, planted near Rachel in order to get, you know, her to, you know, to sort of bring Shelby and Rachel together. You know, that she, you know, he puts the tape there for her to find with "I Dreamed a Dream" on it, where they are, you know. My question about that is, you know, what does everyone think of Jesse's actions here and of Shelby's and of the Jesse and Shelby relationship? Because that always kind of made me raise an eyebrow a bit. Like, I used to not ship it, but I'm like, is this meant to be a thing? Are they banging? Mm-hmm. Like, I used to always think this. Thank you, Caitlin, because it's not like, oh, I actively wanted fan fiction for it, but I was like, is this what I'm meant to be getting here? And we know that Shelby does go there later on with, you know, a young person, so I wouldn't be too surprised.
Remind me, who is she with that's young in the end? Huck. I can't remember.
Huck.
Okay, so we're definitely so you're shipping, if I didn't hear this incorrectly, Rachel and Shelby?
No, Jesse and Shelby.
Okay, there you go. My mind went to a really dark place there, and I didn't like it. I was like, I don't understand. Yeah. Where's this? I was like, is it because they were singing about "I Dreamed a Dream" and that's taking away a childhood? Or I don't know.
No.
All right. Okay.
That's where I was getting it from. But anyways, yes. Well, there's a note to be made here about dark, dreary, rainy days in cars.
What?
Because of kind of like, it's like weird baby drama that Glee does with how Terry did that with Quinn on like a rainy day in a car where they have meetings. And it was just making me think, like, in the world of Glee, where there are so many, like, hidden cameras, apparently, and baby monitors, etc., I assume that the car is the only safe place you can have a conversation anymore, because...
Well, in terms of the rain, I think that it's probably just easier to disguise the outside world of wherever they've parked it, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to talk about on a practical sense. That's parked in the Paramount Pictures car park. It's not parked on a street in Lima, Ohio. You put a bunch of rain and blur outside the windows and it could be anywhere, if you know what I mean. So rather than being able to see clearly out the window at daytime, like it's, you know, anyway, a practicality. But Caitlin, I'm interested in your, you know, murmur that you made a moment ago about the Shelby and Jesse relationship. So, yeah, what were your thoughts on this kind of situation that they've gotten themselves into?
I just was thinking that because... I have such uncomfortable feelings about Will and Finn that I was having vibes that were similarly inappropriate between Shelby and Jesse. I'm like, she's bearing her soul to her teenage student. What is going on? This is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really always kind of, I remember thinking it back then. I'm like, is this meant to be like, is this her like man-child toy boy doing her bidding? Like, how are they this close? It's weird. But yeah, I don't know. Obviously Shelby's made this action to kind of find Rachel. Do you think that, and you know, even the tape that she's made for Rachel seems to, it's not like she's wanted this her whole life and she made it when Rachel was born. She's just decided it and they're pretending that she's wanted Rachel ever since Rachel was born. So Jack, how does that make you feel, like that Shelby's just sort of manipulating the situation like that?
In order to get Rachel now.
Yeah. I mean, so she's pretending it's been a whole life thing.
Well, I don't think she's pretending that, because, I mean, obviously none of us, well, I mean, I personally don't know what it would be like to lose a child when I was younger. Like, it's hard, like, because everyone deals with grief differently, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised if she thinks about the child that she wants, that she gave birth to when she was like a teenager or whatever. Like, I don't know, but
she wasn't she was an adult, and it's not like it was dragged away from her. Like, if you know what I mean, or if she's like 40, and it's not like it was like dragged away from her. Like, oh, I accidentally got pregnant, and I'm 14, and you're dragging away my baby. Like, it was, she chose to be a surrogate on purpose. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I know that. Now I got the age wrong, but like, I know that she didn't get knocked up and then you got taken away. I know it wasn't like that. But, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Shelby still did think about it just all the time. But I don't like the methods in which she's going to try and, you know, like, that's really bad, like, her sneaking through the laws and be like, no, well, if I plant stuff and then she will have to come to me, but it's not natural. And it's like, I don't know, but Glee never dealt with the legalities of adoption very well. So, whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, Mitch, how did you feel about sort of Shelby planting the tape and all that kind of thing?
Well, I think that I'm wearing a rose tint glass here when I think of this plot line because, Natalie, you perhaps remember. I remember, it was like a year or two ago when I remember posting I Dreamed a Dream, the Glee version, and saying that this was like one of the best Glee moments that I could think back to. And I was saying something about like Rachel just had such like a vulnerability that she doesn't have as much anymore now that Lea Michele's kind of shot up in stardom more. But that there really just felt like a lot of authenticity between their relationship in this song. So taken outside of context, I think that I can really, like I was saying, look at that through a rose-tinted glass where I think that this is just a gorgeous, beautiful, awesome moment between daughters and mother. But outside of that, it's disturbing to me that she's using Jesse to get through to Rachel, and it's very atypical that Jesse would fall in love with the girl he's supposed to just be, you know, spying on or whatever. So that kind of made me roll my eyes. I wish that Jesse didn't have an ulterior motive, as I'm sure that you guys also do. I wish Jesse was just there on his own accord because he really just wanted to spice things up like we first thought, and he just is Shelby's creepy critter, I suppose you could say. And I wouldn't say he's that creepy because he feels remorse for it, but more of like Caitlin was referencing, it's creepy that he's back on both ends. It's creepy that he's so close to this teacher at such a young age. It's just it's very hard to wrap my mind around because they look like they're adults, the high schoolers in the show, but I'm supposed to know that they're not adults. So does it make it any more right? I don't know.
Yeah,
because if this looked like a legitimate 16-year-old talking to a legitimate 14-year-old, this scene, or 16 or however, this scene would be a lot more disturbing, you know, in the car, like, her just saying all that stuff. If you think of, like, a true 16-year-old presented on TV, I don't know, it'd be like, what, the show Skins or Degrassi maybe even, but like, Glee doesn't do a very good job of that, so it's hard not to become disillusioned by the fact that we're looking at just two adult actors anyway, so it's like, it's close enough.
That's something I've been trying to remember a lot. Even looking at, like, Tina in this episode, like, I could have totally slayed Tina, but if you look at her from the perspective of, like, someone who's literally, like, naive enough not to know better because she's, like, 15, then it's not that bad, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Jesse is meant to be about 18, but, in terms of what this means for the Jesse and Rachel relationship, I mean, do you think that this is kind of a forgivable circumstance? Because we come to learn, obviously, that not just, like, here, like, him being like, oh, I kind of like her. He really comes to care about her, like, when he comes back to be with her in, like, season 2, and then when he kind of stalks her in season 3 to the nationals, and then when he sees her at, you know, when he sees her at season 3 nationals, and he's still obviously, like, really caring about her, like,
stalk her to nationals, he was there for vocal adrenaline.
No, season 2. Season 2 nationals, where season 3 nationals, he was there legit. Season 2 nationals,
sorry. Okay,
when he comes and sits down and it was like, you just can't stay away. And then afterwards, You know, he's like, Rachel, you were extraordinary. You shouldn't have kissed him, though. Like, he clearly adores her by that point. Like, absolutely adores her. Yeah. So, I mean, do you think, does this kind of, the start to this relationship make you kind of like them together less? Like, do you think that this is something that they should be able to move on from? I mean, despite we know what's coming, but, like, you know, say he was to come back in season six, like, do you think this is forgivable? Jack, I guess, do you want to say?
I think it is forgivable just because they've been through so much since then. Like, this is almost like childish behavior in the whole scheme of things. Like, if Jesse was to come back, or, like, even, like, 5 years, like, after, like, season five or something, I don't know. Like, if Jesse was to come back and they started to rekindle stuff and Rachel was interested in him again, if she was to bring up, oh, but when we were in sophomore, when I was in sophomore year, you threw an egg at my head and manipulated me with my mother, like, It seems too minor to start making a big deal about it. So I think that their relationship, if it was to happen, could work. And this, I think Rachel's already forgiven him in her head, to be honest, already. So I think they can get past this if it were to happen.
Yeah. Caitlin, how about you in terms of Rachel and Jeffsy? Do you actually like them together? Do you think that it, like, regardless of, you know, how much of what we see with Jesse with Rachel at the moment do you think is genuine, like, from him actually, like, you know, discovering that he quite likes her?
I think it's very genuine, and I do like them together. I think they would work very well as a couple. I don't think right now, with the ulterior motives still spinning in the air, that they could work without her knowing, but moving on in the future and them both having grown and been going through a lot and just time passing, I think it's a far more forgivable thing, and that, you know, you can move past it because just so much has passed and they're kind of different people, but similar enough that they would still have good chemistry.
You know, and even if he did sleep with Shelby, even if he did, I mean, Puck slept with Shelby and then, you know, he got back together with Quinn. So that's like, you know, like, slept with, you know, baby mama and then adopted baby mama and then back to real baby mama. So it's not that different. It's not that different to go to, like, you know, mother back to daughter. Like, is it? Like, it's still okay, right? Like, maybe not.
Sure.
Why not, Glee? You've made us believe weirder things. Isn't it weird that, like, Puck is, like, Rachel's stepfather? Everyone's gone, like, dead silent. Like, given that Shelby is the mother of his...
I don't even know what to say to that.
Like, Shelby is the mother of his given-up-for-adoption daughter. And that means
and
that Rachel is...
is the sister
well,
of Beth.
Well, regardless of who Puck has hooked up with or not, we're just talking in like...
Puck has definitely hooked up with mother and daughter, you know, given that he was going out with Rachel.
But that, like, I mean, even his pool cleaning business would lead to that in my head.
We're not talking about the older. We're not necessarily talking about the just older. We're talking about the fact of the two generations in the same family, like, rather than... Anyway, it's getting a bit disturbing.
Yeah, it's very meta, too. It's like, I don't think Lee would ever address that because it's probably too much for them to really comprehend that they wrote that. It's probably
so Puck has slept with mother and daughter, as well as the real mother and adopted mother of his own child. Cool. I still love him, but, you know, that's just... He didn't technically sleep with Rachel, but you know what I'm saying. She
really wanted to.
Yeah, let's move on from those thoughts, shall we? Yeah. I'm pro Jesse and Rachel, regardless of the weird Shelby relationship. And yeah, how about you, Mitch?
It's
now you're just disturbed.
I can't get past this Puck thing. It just really blew my mind. I feel like we've had, like, unraveled some, like, Glee conspiracy theory that's gonna, like, you know, turn out to be the breaking moment of, like, season six. Like, Rachel is really related to Puck in some strange, odd way, and now she must save his life from, I don't know, like, my mind's going different places at this point, but wow.
Okay.
You really blew my mind there, Natalie.
Sorry. Anyway, let's move on then. If anyone doesn't have any major questions to ask, we'll go into the favorite moments of the episode, if that's okay. Jack, what was your favorite moment from the episode?
My favorite moment was the strange, but like, it's not even really favorite. It's more like the underuse of John Michael Higgins. Like, he's so funny. Like, in all, I don't know if you guys have seen much of his other work, but like, he's freaking hilarious. And like, it was great to see him in Glee just for a little bit. But like, I think it was a lot of wasted potential. Like, just when even that whole scene of the what was it called? The show choir. What was the club called? I can't remember the ones who are dealing with their show choir loss or something.
Conversion.
And he's like, it turns out putting on a show about your dad's prostate cancer, and it's just, it was kind of funny to me. I thought it was really funny. But John Michael Higgins, man, they should have used him more than they did.
Can we bring back the show choir conversion group for season 6? Because I think some of these characters need it.
Oh my god, yes.
I want to see Rory there.
Why Rory?
Just because he's just so lost still, and it just, as much as he's supposed to just be deported. No, I don't trust that he's deported.
Rory is the one character who disappeared that has a legitimate reason. He was an exchange student, and now he's gone home.
Remember that Glee article John wrote that like had Rory with like a big question mark on his face, like, where are all these Glee characters? And it was like this long. Oh, never mind.
I feel like what's his face? Joe Christian Dreads. Joe could go to that, like, Glee Club ruin my life situation. Anyway, yeah.
Marley could go to that group. I mean, she's been kind of destroyed by Kitty in a lot of ways, right?
Who?
Marley.
Oh, seriously.
Hmm.
Anyway, Caitlin, how about you?
So mine was when Rachel starts doing quote-unquote research on who her mother is, and she, like, goes and finds Jesse and is like, she decides that her mother has to be Patti LuPone, and Jesse's face, he has the most priceless response, like, this WTF face is amazing.
He's so good at handling her, though. He's so amazing at handling her. Mine was actually the safety dance scene, which I'll explain when we quickly run through the musical numbers, but just because I think it was really cool, and I didn't actually like it the first time I saw it. I'm like, this is really dumb. But after seeing the Glee tour live, I have a completely different opinion on it. So now I had really good feelings watching it. But Mitch, yours was also a Jesse look.
Okay, so there's a moment when they're looking through Rachel's stuff of her babyhood to find what's going on with where Shelby or whatnot, whoever her mom may be. And Rachel reaches into a box, pulls out this little container, and goes, "Aw, these are my baby teeth."
Yeah.
And Jesse's look on his face.
His face was so good.
He's like, "She is the most delusional person I have ever met."
He was just like, "This is so weird." I loved that as well.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, there are a lot of moments in these older Glee episodes where I literally find myself laughing out loud, very loudly, because it's like funnier now that I notice these little nuanced things that I wouldn't if I wasn't like just seeing this for the first time. It's great. Like the Zeiss thing that we went back on, like, oh, so good. Especially in retrospect, it's just so funny.
Jack, what about you for yours? Jack, what about you for the actual quotes?
Yeah, so for my quotes, it was when Will, well, it's a Puck quote, but when it's Will talking about how Brian Ryan's going to back off from destroying the Glee Club, and then Puck just simply goes, "Did he die?"
I wrote that one down as well.
Like, it's just so silly.
Did he die?
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I had that one on my list. I love that.
And did anyone else think that Quinn was rather foxy in her little, like, "But I thought you had the lead role"? Like, oh, I know no one else really appreciates in this podcast as much as I do Diana Agron's lines, but I like her voice, her tone, the way she, like, she kind of owns everything she says in a certain way. And
I like her, but I don't know about it being foxy.
It was, to me, it was foxy. I guess it's the only way I can describe her in a lot of ways.
Right.
I really like her.
Okay. All right. Caitlin, how about you?
So my favorite line was Brian Ryan, of course, because he's fabulous. He says, "I've grown weary of your insults, Will. They sting and they make me want to punch you."
Yeah,
it's just perfect for so many reasons.
I think he says they make me want to punch your face, or something, which was even better. But yeah,
that's a great visual.
It was good. I'm like, yeah, we feel you, Brian Ryan.
So perfect.
I had a Brian Ryan one that I really loved as well, which was when they were in the bar and they were kind of, you know, he revealed that he was like a fraud and that he still loved like performing. And he was like, once a year I go to, like, I tell my wife I'm going on a business trip and I go to New York, see a bunch of Broadway shows. He's like, I have a box of playbills stashed away in my basement, Will, like porn. It was great. I just, it was so funny. But the other one that I really liked, sorry to pick two, was just what I mentioned before about, like, Jesse being so good at handling Rachel, because he really is. After she starts explaining the Patti LuPone situation, he kind of gently is just like, and was Mandy Patinkin in on this in terms of her, like, having the you know, the Patti LuPone coming through on tour? Because Rachel kind of knows she's being crazy, like, because straight away she's like, yeah, do you want to hear my research that proves Bernadette Peters is my mother, if you know what I mean? Like, which was also great. But, yeah, I just think Jesse is so good at handling her, and I love it. So yeah,
I wrote the Mandy Patinkin line down, too.
Yeah, it's so good.
And the history in those little moments, too, was kind of neat to, like, you know, I guess see pictures from, like, moments that Rachel was talking about, and it was just really kind of really produced really well, too. So it, like, mm-hmm. sold the joke even more that, like, Rachel looked this much into seeing, you know, who her real mother was. It was great.
Mitch, how about you? You said that there was something about yours you needed to explain, I think.
Yeah, no, it was kind of when we were talking about the Tina Artie stuff, where Artie is on the ground, and this is a moment that I always expect Artie to just be like, oh, yeah, I need help. I mean, that kind of sucks. And he just goes, this is all your fault. You pushed me to this. And I'm like, she literally did not. You are the one that said, I want to stand up. And then she's the one that's like, this isn't a good idea. And he's like, okay, whatever. And he just tries to walk, like, and she's like, and then he falls down. He's like, this is all your fault, Tina. It literally felt like parody. It was that ridiculous to me.
Tina are really freaking weird, to, like, with each other a lot of the time.
It doesn't make sense how everyone shoves this much on Tina. Because, yes, as we're noted, that she's breaking boundaries all the time. But she doesn't do that much to really deserve as much, like, I mean, she's kind of just like Hermione in Harry Potter, because she just is kind of like the person that everyone's just like, damn it, why do you exist? And it's like, I don't know, sorry, bye.
So in terms of the song list, just going through very quickly, Daydream Believer, the flashback just of Will's old Glee Club, totally loved that flashback. Did anyone else have any particularly strong opinions on that? We mentioned before, like, the styling and stuff like that, but totally. Just the acting of, like, teenage Will, I actually really loved, so, yeah.
The, like, shit-eating grin that he had in his face.
Yeah. And then Piano Man, as we said, the sing-along in the bar. Did you, Jack, like this one? Did they do this song again on Glee? Did they do Piano Man later on?
Blaine did it in the Billy Joel episode.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I was about to say, it feels like a Blaine song. Yeah, if
do
anything.
You like this? Yeah, Caitlin and Jack, did you like the Blaine version or the Brian Ryan version of Piano Man better?
Well, I was saying a bit earlier before I got cut, I don't know if I said it before I got cut out, but I don't like Blaine's version of Piano Man, so, yeah. Mm. So, I mean, this version's a bit better.
I adore Blaine's version of Piano Man and listen to it all the time, so clearly I liked Blaine's version because I'm biased.
Yeah. I can't actually remember. I remember wanting him to do this because, it's a good solo piano song. And I think I have, like, rough cuts, like bootlegs of Darren doing it at a bar or a concert or something, like, not as Blaine, obviously. Can't quite remember what it was like on screen. I'm going to have to go and have a look. But, yeah. Moving on from that, the audition song where the idiots decided to both audition for the lead role in the musical, even though it was meant to be, you know, a situation that Will was trying to get to help Brian in order to help himself, Dream On by Aerosmith, so that the, you know, title number of the episode. Did you think much of this one? Mitch, did you like this one at the time or now, or any feelings about it?
Yeah, feelings haven't really changed. As I said before, thought that Neil had a little bit more of a challenging part because he has that really high falsetto note that he rocks in the end. And
I think he was better than Will. I think he was better than Matt Morrison.
Well, I think his the vocals of his part presented a stronger challenge that he was able to conquer, rather than Matt was lower harmony when they did harmonize. And other than that,
yeah,
I thought that they were on equal ground, because I thought, as I often do, that Matt does have a pretty good voice. He obviously has a lot of experience and knows how to control a lot of those nuanced things of singing and voice control. So I really liked his attitude, oddly enough, Will's attitude that he had. And up until he started, like, doing, like, these weird spin jump things to, like, show Neil how cool he was, or Brian how cool he was, it just got really lame right there.
This was a really dumb song to audition for Les Mis with, by the way.
I know, this doesn't relate to anything.
That being said, whatsoever. The woman before them with Big Spender, perfect! Perfect audition song if you're not singing the actual song. If she was auditioning for Mrs. Thénardier, which I assume she was, given her age range,
yeah.
That totally could have bought that. But anyway, like, would have been actually great. But anyway,
I mean, there, we could probably go on forever about different songs we would have wished they'd been to sing, but Natalie, whoever you were to call next.
Yeah, no, Safety Dance, I just wanted to say something about quickly, because when I saw the you know, this the first time, I was like, this is, like, kind of dumb, because I knew the song already, and it's a dumb song. Like, it's a, you know, whatever. It ain't no deep and meaningful thing. And they put a lot of, like, auto-tune or synth, like, the original sort of styling over Artie's voice. But, and I was kind of like, and then they included it on the Glee tour, the live tour, the big one, the world tour, not the first one. And it was the highlight of the show most of the times. I don't know if anyone else saw the Glee tour. I don't think Mitch did. Caitlin, did you see it at all?
Nope.
But you might have seen the movie. Some people might have seen the movie. But anyway,
I did watch the movie.
The live tour of Safety Dance was just, number one, no auto-tune on the voice, so it sounded better. Number two, just so much fun, in that everyone was really involved. It was the number where a lot of the, like, various cast and crew who weren't, like, meant to be in the scene just came on. It was, like, the tour in-joke. Everyone learnt the dance and started contributing to it, if you know what I mean. And so you'd get people, like, and because the tour that I saw was, like, right at the end, it was, like, the very end of the Glee tour, you had, like, 30 to 40 people on stage, like crew, random casts that aren't actually in it, like members of the Warblers, like, you know, like you know, people from hair and makeup, you know, people who'd put on weird costumes, like, you know, Warbler ties around their heads, you know, creepy green man suit, you know, Darren in his sunglasses and stuff like that, like all doing it, if you know what, and it was really fun. Like, it was their, like, ridiculous moment, if you know what I mean. And so because of that, I have really, really fond feelings towards it. So then I watched it again and I really loved it. But yeah, Safety Dance is, like, a big moment for the live show, and hilarious. So
okay, I have a pretty big question that I don't know if it answers itself. Was Artie, quote unquote, in his chair for any and all of the concert except for Safety Dance?
Yes, all of it, except for Safety Dance.
Interesting. And now my other question in general is, don't you think, I was thinking as he gets up for Safety Dance, he's kind of wobbly, and I was like, that probably was realistic, because wouldn't you think his legs kind of just get tired or just aren't working to their full functionality, because his job is to sit in a chair all day, and it's like...
I don't know. You'd have to ask Kevin McHale, but I do know that they've said that, like, I think that they have only had one take ever in the history of Glee ruined by his leg twitching or moving. He does really keep it incredibly still.
He does, especially when he's, like, doing that fall that he's doing when they're trying to tap dance. It's kind of shocking that he's able to trust the fall as an actor to where he... it must have been a stunt double where he falls on them.
Don't think so. I mean, I think they just practiced a lot. But anyway...
Okay.
Mitch, you obviously liked I Dreamed a Dream a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think that it's great harmony. It's, oddly enough, how I first really learned of Les Mis when I watched this episode of Glee, and, you know, learning that harmony was kind of like a big thing of, like, me learning what harmony was, so it was a really big song for that, and, of course, I've already explained what a big deal it was for me to see, I think more just like Leah and Idina singing such a beautiful song together on stage that brought me into so many different types of love of musical theater in general. So another one of the songs, kind of like a House Not a Home, that really means a lot to me.
I think that this is okay. To me, it really made it stand out that, like, Lea Michele's voice seemed a fair bit weaker than Idina Menzel's. Like, it made that...
Yeah.
Like, it really made... Putting them right together, it made me, like, it made... You know, that one bit where Rachel's like, oh, my God, what if she's bad? What if she's better than me? Idina's definitely better than her. And I think that...
Is she now? Oh, Natalie, we could throw it down right here.
I don't always she like Idina Menzel's voice. And I don't always like Idina Menzel's voice. And the first thing I would have heard Idina in is Rent, like as Maureen. And I freaking hate her as Maureen. I absolutely hate that character. So,
but that's a challenging role, and she did a good job there. So I'd almost give you points.
I hate the character. It's not about her. I hate that character. So
yeah, she's pretty obnoxious.
I hate the character's songs. So. Yeah.
Oh, Natalie, though, come on. To me, it comes down to live performance, where I've seen plenty of Idina / Lea live performances, not together, and I'm always blown away by Lea's, and Idina's, I'm always wanting a lot more.
I don't know. Anyway, in this particular thing, I think that they didn't really go that well together. This is probably my least favorite song from Les Mis, and I know Les Mis literally breath perfect from start to finish. And it's also a romantic song in the musical, and not that it matters that much, but I was like always about this, but I don't know. Caitlin,
well, that's kind of awkward to a certain extent, because remember how I was like confused how you were talking about Shelby versus Jesse at first? I was like, wait, are we talking Shelby Rachel because of A Journey Dream?
Anyway, Caitlin, did you like this one at all, or not a fan?
I thought it was fine. I mean, I liked the moment, but, you know, it was fine.
Glee, definitely, I feel like, I kind of liked that they did a Les Mis song when they'd been talking about Les Mis earlier in the musical, if you're not, earlier in the episode. Like, I kind of liked that little bit of tie-in, but, you know, whatever. But Dream a Little Dream, the final number, is... for Artie, which is a song that has a lot of different cover versions, so I'm not sure which original I'm basing it on, but so many cover versions. This was flawlessly good. I love this song, and it was so beautiful, and and the tap thing is traditional as well. It is that song does feature a tap solo in a lot of cover versions, so they did it really traditionally, really beautiful. Artie's voice is Kevin McHale's voice is so good. You know, they made it very sad, and I adored this. But, yeah, does anyone else have any thoughts about that final number?
It was really nice. Like, it was just a really, really, really nice number. Like, the song was just – it was lovely. Like, his voice is just so smooth, and, you know, it works really well for the song.
Yeah. The full version, like, if anyone's ever listened to the full version of this, it actually has a key change, in the second verse, which, like, where they go up, like, half an octave, which he does so well, and it's such a nice song, which they don't include the key change in the TV cut, but anyway, I love that, and, yeah.
You know what the song, it kind of reminds me of the one that he's singing, Dancing by Myself. It has the same flow, although it's not the same type of tune. It has the same flow in his voice in particular that I really care for. And
Bit. Have you heard the original of Dancing by Myself? Oh, you would have, because it's actually in the episode. But the original of Dancing
No, I had actually outside of that, believe it or not.
Is incredibly fast, so they actually strip it back for him, I guess.
Totally.
It might have been someone else's cover of it. But yeah, the pacing of Dream a Little Dream is like the original. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, does anyone else have anything to say about this episode before we finish off with a little bit of news? No?
No.
Well, claps for Neil Patrick Harris / Joss Whedon, although I can't say that I'm not just burning with curiosity now as to why you wouldn't care to believe Joss Whedon exists anymore, Natalie, but that's neither here nor there.
I can tell you in, like, two sentences if you really want to know.
Okay.
I can tell you in less than 30 seconds. Because he fucked up the Avengers really badly, and I'm really angry about it, and I'm angry about him continuing to direct the Avengers films.
As in, like,
I was a big...
Go ahead.
He fucked up the characters really badly compared to what they are like in all of the rest of their canon. And especially within their canon in the flow of movies, like their solo movies, compared to what they're like in the Avengers. And I'm really... And I used to love him, like what he did with Buffy and Firefly meant a lot, but it's like, it seems like that, like, and he used to be really held up as an awesome, iconic, progressive kind of, you know, showrunner and director. But, like, as time has moved on, people have then gone on to be better than him and set higher standards than him, and he has not risen to meet them. Not saying he doesn't do great other work. Like, I saw his Much Ado About Nothing film, which is fantastic, but I don't think he should be playing in other people's sandboxes in terms of the Avengers, because he's projected too much of his own idea on them, and he's written them as just another version of his own characters over and over again, and he's ruined a lot of the actual characteristics that were set up in the solo movies for the characters. So, yeah. Anyway, that's why I'm pretending he doesn't exist at the moment. Winning smile. Anyway, yeah, did we...
I'm assuming I was supposed to think of Jesse's winning smile right there.
If anyone wants to, you know, carry on with that conversation, you can find me on Twitter at Natalie Fisher. But yes, Jack, if you wanted to go along with that, the news, you can do that.
Yeah, so it's only really, like, I don't think... It's not huge news, but we've got the full song list for the second episode. I mean, I can't really remember where the source is from, but it's been floating around many of the Glee spoiler blogs, which I think are quite reputable. I mean, the ones that I look at, yeah, at least. Anyway, but before that, we've just got a little quote, and I can't remember where I pulled this from, but I didn't make it up. It's somewhere, and it's been floating around. Anyway, it says Kitty Wilde makes an appearance. The first newbie returns.
Really?
She's the HBIC of the cheerleaders. I don't know what HBIC means, but whatever.
Head bitch in charge. It means head bitch in charge. Yeah.
She's very. Now this part makes me. This is for the second episode of season 6. Sorry. Now this part makes me very interested. It says she's very bitter about how she was treated by the Glee grads and by Artie when he left for college. Now I understand why she'd be shitty at Artie, because, you know, he broke up with her, slept around, and got chlamydia. But why is she upset about the Glee graduates? Like, I mean, they didn't really treat her that badly, did they? I mean, and I was saying,
maybe
this
they
to
just
mention,
ditched
Caitlin,
them.
Before
maybe
you came
they
on, Natalie,
just...
that I was thinking. Well, I was thinking that it might be more like a breaking the fourth wall on how the 2.0s would, so the new kids were treated. Like on the show, like she's gonna be like the fourth wall, like commentary on how they were treated. But yeah, what do you think? I don't know. What do you reckon?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't know about this, but yeah, I didn't know about this. But it's, you know, I mean, if we left off, you know, season 3, I don't remember that. You know, obviously the we had kind of the original group graduating in season 3, and then half of the group still in the Glee Club in season 4 with the newbies. Maybe once all of those new kids, like Blaine and all of Sam, you know, once they all graduated, maybe the Glee Club just disbanded and no one made an effort to, like, get more people for them or something. Like, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't really understand, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Caitlin, Mish, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, basically, it's gonna be cool to see Kitty back, but I agree with you, Jack. It doesn't really make sense. And Natalie, a lot of this fits in with how you were referencing how, I do not remember the actress's name right now, but you could probably fill me in. Becca Tobin's really good friends with the cast and all. And,
yeah, she is.
And you know what's funny? I don't know how relevant this may be to exactly what we're talking about, but I was just brought to mind that we never discussed the fact that apparently Leah and Becca were a part of that large nude scandal.
So that's something we need to discuss at all.
No, but I was just thinking about it, and I was just I was thinking of where Becca would relate to, like, a current cast member, and I would hope and assume that Becca and Leah would, of course, have a lot in common to talk about right now, and that they would be really good friends. Unfortunately, with the passing of Becca's beloved,
I don't think that those two things make a friendship. It's like, yeah,
well, they have a certain lot of common, I'd say, at least.
Well.
Yeah, but that's kind of a weird thing to pair people up about. I know that Becca handled that situation incredibly well. Like, yeah, just the only thing I would say about that is Becca handled that situation, like, she literally made a joke about it, so she handled that publicly very well, but I don't think it's anything to do with, like, her coming back to the show or anything like that, so I don't think it's significant.
No, it was just a thought that I was having that kind of ran concurrently with, like, her being friends with the cast, perhaps, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a big point of discussion we should have, because I've got a lot of... I mean, I could say something about that, but there's no point. But I mean, and in saying that, I do think Leah and Becca are actually good friends. I mean, I remember seeing photos of them like shopping together, and it made me interested because like they were never ever associated in the show. But anyway, yeah. But Caitlin, I want to ask you, like, I mean, I think that out of all the new kids to come back, I think that Unique should come back, and I'm not surprised that Kitty is, just based on she was. Those two were the most popular of the new kids. But Caitlin, do you think that there's a place on the show for the rest of the new kids, or what do you reckon? Because I know that you like them quite a lot.
If they don't all get to show up in this last season, I'm going to be furious because yeah, they same. Deserve it. They've yeah. been so poorly treated.
They can't just
they
drop five
deserve
characters.
That farewell.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and
yeah, they can't just start
school,
from
you know?
Scratch. Like, if the other people are younger, you know, they're only going to have five fucking kids to go to sectionals with or whatever. If they're just talking about the new, like, 3.0s, you know, so surely the 2.0s who are all now juniors or whatever might be like, oh, Glee Club's starting up again. Oh, you know, maybe we should go join again. And they actually do come back, but they've been keeping that secret.
One of the spoiler sources going around said that Sue made all of them transfer to different schools.
What the? What?
That's
Wait,
what
so
I remember.
What was that? I missed that.
That the one of the spoiler sources that I have read has said that they're not the newbies are not around because Sue made them transfer.
That's insane. That's insane. That's literally
sorry.
Like that is the stupid. I would be so offended if I was one of those cast members. Like, did Ryan Murphy just hate all of them? Like, why would he not just have like keep them as like the new Glee Club if he's making a new Glee Club? Like, what the fuck? Like, that is so insane. Anyway,
that is the best and worst thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's so awful.
Who made them transfer?
That's
okay,
so
right.
bad. Let's go on.
I mean, but apparently in Gleavers, it's really easy to transfer schools because, you know, people do it like on the drop of a dime.
People
Jesse
transfer
and
all
Blaine
the time.
And Kurt. I mean, come on.
Let's carry on.
All right. Yep. I'll try and rush through this because we've been going for quite a while, but I've got a lot of feelings about the leaked song list for the episode 2. All right. Everyone's going to have to bear with me for a bit because I might be talking for a bit. Okay. So the first
right,
song that they're going to do is Take On Me by Aha, sung by Rachel Kurt, Sam, Brittany, Santana, Artie, Tina, Mercedes, Puck, and Quinn. Tightrope by Janelle Monáe, sung by Jane and the Warblers. I have no idea. I don't give a shit about that. Problem by Ariana Grande featuring Iggy Azalea, sung by Quinn, Santana, Brittany, and Artie.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
How is that even going to work? Anyway, go on.
Oh, no, it's going to work. Oh, my God.
Thanks, Sally, by Wilson Pickett. I'm so excited. Sung by Roderick, backed by Quinn, Santana, and Brittany. And now the biggest thing that I'm going to like cry about talking about this is Home by Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zero, sung by Rachel Kurt, Brittany, Santana, Artie, Tina, Mercedes, Puck, Quinn, Mason, Madison, Spencer, Jane, and Roderick. So those last five are the new kids. Now, okay, so last episode I was talking about how I mentioned for the longest time I had wanted them to do Take On Me, and just the fact that they're doing it with all the originals, I'm just freaking out just thinking about it. I can just imagine each of their voices in different parts of the songs, and that song off by heart. My God, I can't wait. And especially if you've been seeing pictures of the cast been like, I think Court Overstreet's been posting a few of them in like the old 80s get up, and holy shit, I can't wait. Diana looks amazing, so is Cord. Whew. Okay, all right, calm down. All right, now Tightrope, I have no idea what that song is, don't care. Problem,
can
I think
just say
will be
one
really cool.
tiny thing? Can I interrupt one tiny
sorry,
thing?
Yeah,
this
sorry,
Jane and Dalton
yeah.
Warbler thing? I think this is the stupidest plot I've ever heard of. Not because is this plot going to be like, I'm a girl, I should be allowed to go to this all-boys school? Because, I'm sorry, called me old-fashioned, but no, you either go to a co-ed school or you go to the single-sex school of your choosing. Is she transgender? I don't think so. She's just a girl who apparently respects the Warblers more than her own school and wants to join them. And I get that. I mean, I get that sometimes like an all-boys or an all-girls environment has something that might be better than somewhere else. We've seen, you know, the Glee Club face off against all-boys or all-girls schools before. But is this plot really going to be a girl trying to get into an all-boys school? Because
she's
this is not young.
What?
She has...
The spoilers say that she has a family connection, so she's already at the school. Like,
has Dalton always been co-ed, or does a family connection mean that you can just go there? This is not Young Americans with frickin' Catherine Monig and Ian Somerhalder. I'm sorry. She ain't disguising herself as a boy and then hitting on her roommate. Sorry if anyone's too young to remember that, but seriously, how?
She's what, the man. What,
or maybe she's like the daughter of like the principal, but like she doesn't go to the school, but she like lives there with the family or something. And I don't know. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry, but no. Single sex schools exist for a reason. She can either go to a co-ed school or whatever, but this is a dumb plot. Sorry. Anyway, sorry, Mitch, go on.
No, that wasn't Jack. Me. I think that was Jack.
Sorry, Jack, go on.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay. Oh, anyway, the next song, yeah, Problem by Ariana Grande featuring Iggy Azalea. If you don't really know this song, you're sort of living under a rock. I mean, it's pretty big. And I think it would... I mean, I'm not really a huge fan of Ariana Grande. I mean, I don't know, like, just musically, I just don't really like it too much. But Quinn, Santana, and Brittany, it's going to be great to hear them back on the track. And then I can imagine Artie singing on it as well. I think it'd just be pretty cool.
I think he'll do the rap.
About that, or...
Jack, okay. I won't go on like a Demi Lovato-esque tirade, but I do love Ariana Grande a lot. Did just buy tickets for her concert, and it's like a newfound love that kind of came along with Problem. I had been singing Problem in insane amounts for quite a while now, and I really, really dig her vocals. I think Ariana is just a really, really talented artist and has a lot to offer right now to this whole pop culture sphere. So... I didn't know that this was happening until I looked at your little spoiler list, and that's the unholy trinity singing one of my favorite songs like of recent times. So I just don't know how that can get any better. I really don't.
Well, I think Ariana Grande is like, she's not bad. She's one of the better artists on the like on the main pop radio right now. But I don't know. I really, really don't like the song "Break Free." I mean, I think that's just terrible. I don't like that much. Anyway,
well, Break Free is one of her weaker presentations. I'll give you that much. She does have a lot better, I guess you could say, musicality to a lot of her other, not even just her singles, but to her album, of course. So, yeah, she like I said, I just think she's a lot to offer because she has, of course, everyone's comparing to Mariah Carey, very appropriately so, but I'm just wondering, I think Santana probably will end up taking anything of the high notes, because none of the Unholy Trinity really ends up, maybe Brittany actually, but she doesn't really sing well, if you ask me. No one can really, I think, sing as high as she does in that song, so they might just have to get creative with harmony, auto-tune, or taking it down like an octave, or a combination of the three.
Yeah, I think you put too much store on the actual tunes of songs, because they do arrangements all the time, so I wouldn't worry about that. But anyway, I couldn't even pick Ariana Grande out of a lineup, so yeah, get back to Mustang Sally. A song I actually know.
Yeah, sung by Wilson Pickett. Yeah. This is a song like that was very, very prevalent like in my childhood. I just remember like my granddad would always play this song, and it's just like one of the songs that just reminds me of like, you know, when I was younger and stuff. But it's sung by Roderick, who is one of the new characters, and if I'm recall correctly, yeah, he's the gay footballer who doesn't take anyone's shit and stuff. And that's backed by Quinn Santana and Brittany. Now I think that with this one, I think that all we can gather from
Anyway, I don't know which one it is, but I think that's the shy, pudgy nerd, not the footballer. But I don't know. I might be wrong. Carry on. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know. Yeah, either one of them. But I think that, like, I think a lot of what we can gather from this is that a lot of the new kids are going to come back to recruit the new kids. A lot of the graduates are going to come back to recruit new kids, which should be pretty fun. I just really hope that, like, as I said, the 2.0s are... involved in this somehow. Natalie, do you have any thoughts about Mustang Sally? You said you like that song.
No, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a classic, and, you know, it sounds like it's going to be traditional country with female backups. Like, you know, like, I don't know why that, you know, the Quinn Santana and Brittany are hanging around the schools. Like, and if it's going to be weird to have all these people just hanging out in the school that don't teach there or attend. But, yeah, should be good. I'm surprised they haven't done this song already, but, yeah.
Yeah. Now the very last song is a song that, oh man, Home by Ed Sheeran and the Magnetic Zeros. Now this song, for the longest time. I mean, I'm assuming do you guys know this song?
I
think
do.
You would, Natalie. I don't know about. Yeah, Caitlin, Mitch, do you know this song, Home?
No,
not yet.
You'll know it if you hear it because it's been in a lot of fucking advertisements. Yeah. But yeah,
someone hum
really?
A bit?
I've heard on any ads.
Do you want to sing it, Jack?
Sorry?
I want to hear what it sounds like a little bit. Can you hum it a little bit?
Well, the whistle will be...
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And like, home is whenever I'm with you. Like, anyway, but it's so many ads. But anyway, go on.
No, okay. I do have an opinion on that song that I now that I recognize exactly what it is. It comes up a lot on, like, my... kind of like country Pandora. It's a really, I don't know, what genre of music would you define Home as?
Indie pop.
But it does have a country sound to it, me.
Indie pop, yep.
And it just, it's a...
It's not a country song. It has country influences,
of.
But it's yeah. not. It's only because indie pop people
yeah, like,
use
I don't
bandos.
Know. Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you guys know the band Boy and Bear. I mean, I think you might, Natalie, but like, yeah. it's similar to that. Like, they're not. I wouldn't call them country, but they're very like it's that same stylings. Anyway,
well, do you think that they're going to include
like,
the
like, it's just
talking
such a
parts?
Great song. And like, hold on, Mitch.
It's funny. Delay is like.
Hold on, Mitch. I'll just let me finish. Yeah. It's a very good song, and like it's. It's like it's always sort of like just been around. It came out, I think, 2005, and it's just really funny because it's like lately, like this song has been coming up like more and more in like my close group of friends. And like recently, I just went for like a week long camping trip and hiking and stuff. And this song, we just were always singing and playing it. Even before that, it was just so prevalent. So it's really, really nice to me that like I think that at least the originals are going to be singing this with people who maybe remind them of themselves in terms of getting the Glee Club back together. And it was funny, because I was going to mention this on the last week's episode, like, I was going to say, I don't know if they should sing Home on Glee. I was going to say this, like, when the title of last week's episode was Home, and it was all about that, I was thinking Home would be good, but I don't know how good it would be on Glee. But just the fact that this is going to be the artists or the characters who are going to sing it, I really am really, really excited for it.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I suppose... This is all kind of quite interesting so far. I'm curious as to what they're going to do, but yeah. Soz 2.0s, sorry. Sorry about your lives.
Yeah.
All right, Jeez. Does anyone have anything else finally to say?
I'm kind of digging the length of these recap episodes, the flashbacks, because... It makes me feel like our audience can really... like delve back to the past of Glee in depth with us, and
it is a bit long and a bit too tangential, and that we should be trying to do an hour for each episode, not an hour and a half, but oh well, especially because I have to go and pack for overseas, so yeah.
That's why my fault hosting.
no, it's fine. But anyway, we should sign off now, because 3 hours is very long for any podcast, so yeah, we shall see you all in a few weeks' time with our finale of season one, and then we'll be starting to think about season two. So, yeah, for now, everyone just say bye and we'll go. So, bye-bye.
Say bye and we'll go.
All right, bye.
Hilarious. Bye.
Bye.